Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA show!
Back in your life on this Tuesday, September 3rd, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Hope you're doing well. If you celebrated, hope you had a nice Labor Day weekend. Yes, usually we do the show on Mondays at 1 o'clock today. Of course, it is Tuesday. It's around 1:25 p.m. Eastern time. We had to move the show a day, but we are here because we didn't want to leave you hanging. There is way too much going on in the world of MMA. Too much news. Too much history being made. We've got a huge event this Saturday in Abu Dhabi, UFC 242. We've got a jam-packed lineup for all of you today with Tony Ferguson and Dominic Cruz and Kevin Lee and Carlos Condit joining us. A who's who, if you will. But of course, you know, on Saturday, history was made in Shenzhen, China. The first ever Chinese UFC champion was crowned. Her name is Zhang Weili. She resides in Beijing, and it is currently 1:26 a.m. on Wednesday morning over there. So let's not waste any time and say hello to the brand spanking new UFC strawweight champion, the one and only Zhang Weili. She's also joined by her translator, Nadia Zhang. Thank you so much for doing this so early, so late over there in China. We really appreciate it. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
So Zhang, it has been around 3 days since you made history, since you became UFC champion. You finished Jessica Andrade in 42 seconds. It was an unbelievable performance. You were praised. Everyone's talking. Everyone's buzzing about you. What is it like 3 days later? Has the dream set in? Does it feel real, or does it still feel like you are on a high, like you're on cloud nine?
Yes, and I already realized that I received the belt, and it's an amazing thing to have in my hands.
In your wildest dreams, as you were preparing for this fight, did you ever think it would go like that, that you would defeat her in less than a minute?
Yes,
I always knew that I'm gonna win, and I always was sure that I'm gonna get it there and get the belt.
Were you surprised that she was so aggressive early in the fight? That seemed to play in your hands. Did you think that she would do that as you were preparing for the fight?
Yes, I before the fight, I saw a lot of videos with the way she was fighting, and I was ready to this kind of beginning. And I saw that other people, other girls were running away from her when she was starting so aggressively. And I decided to move in a different direction, and I decided not to run away and just start to respond to her punches and to go forward.
You debuted in the UFC 13 months ago. If I would have told you prior to your debut in August of last year in Los Angeles that in a little over a year you'd be UFC champion, honestly, would you have believed me, or is this happening a little sooner than you expected?
Well, I always knew that I'm going to be a champion, but I never expected that it's going to be happen that fast.
Yeah, it happened, I think, faster than most people expected it. And now it seems like this is the dream scenario for the UFC. They have always been searching for a Chinese star, let alone a Chinese champion. And now here you are. And I'm wondering if you have already felt the impact of what you have accomplished. Are you starting to realize that life will never be the same for you? Are you starting to get a lot more attention than you've ever had before?
对，UFC 来说的是个梦想，一个中国选手拿到冠军，然后你现在会不会感觉影响你已经当了冠军，你结果你会不会感到就是其他的人对你会给你更大就是拿到的冠军的影响，你结果你会感得到。
对，我知道，如果我拿到冠军以后，一定会，对中国的MMA会有一个很大的推动，因为很多人，他们不是特别了解MMA，中国也需要有一个冠军出来，然后他们才会认识，就像那个篮球的NBA，然后像那个网球的李娜，像田径的那个谁，那个刘翔一样。
Yes, I always knew that in the UFC, in the MMA, needs to be a fighter who will be taking leading positions and who will be representing China and showing Chinese people the example of being a successful athlete in this kind of sport.
I think you mentioned Yao Ming. Obviously, he was one of the more famous Chinese athletes to come over and be successful in America and then make the sport of basketball more popular in China. Have you ever met Yao? Has he ever reached out to you, maybe in the aftermath of this fight? And do you think that you can have the same impact that, you know, that he had in the NBA and basketball in our sport, mixed martial arts?
他想知道你是否见过他，他是否跟你说了什么关于你的比赛的？啊，我没有见过他，但是我经常会看到，我只看过他的一个纪录片，然后我也经常会关注他。嗯，No,
he didn't contact me yet after the fight, after I got the belt, but of course I'm following him and I'm following his career and he's very famous in China.
What was that?
He was very famous in China.
Yes, of course. One of the all-time greats for the Houston Rockets. I'm wondering what your reaction was when you saw a message from Tom Brady, who I know you're a big fan of, before the fight and after the fight, congratulating you. How cool was that?
You saw Tom Brady
say, congratulations. How did you feel? I felt very happy. I really like him. I'm a fan of his. I think he is my fan.
Well, I'm also his fan, and when I saw that he congratulates me, it was an amazing thing to see, and I was very happy to receive his congratulations.
Yeah, you've had Tom Brady congratulate you. I saw The Rock wish you well. Everyone's talking. What's the coolest thing to happen to you since you won the belt? Is there something, a moment behind the scenes, a conversation you had with someone that you'll always remember, that you'll never forget, to really, you know, speak to the impact that this has had on so many people?
最激动的事情就是我在现场听到了那么多人为我加油，为我欢呼，然后为我流眼泪，我觉得 让我充满能量，我觉得是一件非常有意义，非常那个美妙的事情。
The most exciting and the biggest thing that I have experienced after I got the belt is the reaction of the public at the Shenzhen. How they screamed, how they cried, how they cheered for me. It was amazing, and I never experienced something like that.
You know, there are people who are saying you will be now more famous than Conor McGregor, more famous than Khabib Nurmagomedov, more famous than any MMA fighter ever because of where you're from, because there's never been anyone like you in our sport. Do you agree with that? And are you comfortable being that kind of person? Do you want to be famous worldwide and be sort of the face of mixed martial arts around the world?
我都人认为你会比 Conor McGregor 比 Habib 变得更有名的更强的，然后你觉得会不会是这样子的？而且你的感觉怎么样？
我拿到冠军以后感觉非常忙碌，然后我没有想过我会变得会特别有名。我觉得我是在做我自己喜欢做的事情，然后我觉得这非常好。然后但是如果能变得他们那么有名的话，我觉得这是一件更好的事情，因为我更可以推动中国 MMA 的发展，然后让更多人认识到 MMA 并且参与到这个运动当中来。
I always was doing something that I really like, and to become famous wasn't my ultimate goal. If I become more famous than those guys, it will be great because it will help to promote MMA in China faster and on a bigger scale.
I understand you have a big media tour coming up in China, and then you're going to Abu Dhabi. I'm wondering if it has at all been overwhelming for you, and I know that your manager Brian Butler is there with you, and you know he's the one who got you into the UFC, and now you've got all these people reaching out. What has the process been like? Has it been overwhelming? Is he fielding all this? How are you handling all this attention that you're now getting? How does it feel?
现在你要在中国跟很多媒体做采访，然后你要去阿布达比，你现在很多人对你有兴趣，然后想知道你的是想问你很多问题，你自己感觉怎么样？对那么多人看你，一直在看你。
我觉得这是一个过程。我觉得刚开始拿到冠军肯定会有特别多人都会聚集过来，然后都会有很多的问题，因为我觉得他们我是那种突然出现的，所以他们肯定会觉得我特别特别那个神秘。
Well, I think it's all a part of the process because I became the champion so fast and I appeared out of nowhere and nobody knows me. So, of course, I've got a lot of attention and it's quite normal and predictable.
I know that you are very close with your manager who is originally from Hong Kong, Brian Butler. He's found a lot of champions, especially in the strawweight division. Can you tell us about your connection with him? I understand you gave him a very special gift last week, you know, during fight week that meant a lot to him. Why do you feel so close to him? Why do you guys have such a great working relationship?
I want to ask you, Brian. He thinks you and him are very close. So he wants to know why it's like this. Why did you give him a gift? Why is he going to affect you so much?
我们的关系非常好，然后我们相处的也非常愉快。他是一个非常好的经理人，他也是我的朋友，我也把他当成我的哥哥一样。我觉得我们是一家人，所以我们的关系非常相处的非常好。对。
Well, yes, so we have a very good connection, and I consider him not only my manager but also a friend, and He helped me a lot, so naturally our connection became very close.
Dana White said after the fight that he wants you to fight in America next. He wants you to defend the title in America. Do you like that idea, or do you think that you should be defending the title in China to help make the sport even bigger there, to open more doors there? What would you prefer?
Dana, he said the next fight in America.你觉得怎么样？你想在美国打，或者你认为在中国打更好一些？因为在中国会促进 MMA 的这种。
其实我觉得在哪儿打都可以。如果在中国打很好，但是如果在美国打的话，我希望我的教练的签证都搞定，因为每次我去就是在美国比赛，我的教练都是一个短缺的一个问题，都因为签证过不了。所以我希望，如果我在美国比赛的话，希望我的教练团队都可以去。
Well, I think it doesn't matter where to fight, but just I hope that if I go to fight, I'm going to fight in the U.S., all my team will be able to go with me, to join with me, and to overcome the issue with visas that they faced last few fights that I was having in USA, because I would love to have them all next to me.
Realistically, when would you like to return?
I want to fight.
想打谁？
我什么时候打？
我觉得我都可以，我随时都可以战斗。我觉得你让我再过一个月或者再过两个星期啊，一个星期比赛，我觉得都没问题。我觉得我随时都状态非常好。
I can fight anytime, and my condition is very good. It can be in 1 week or in 1 month. I'm ready.
对，任何时间都可以。
Anytime.
It seems like you may have three options for your first title defense. Rose Namajunas, who we don't know if she's going to come back, Tatiana Suarez, who is still dealing with an injured neck, or the winner of Joanna Jędrzejczyk, the former champion, and Michelle Waterson. That fight happens on October 12th. Who would you like for your first title defense to be against? If you had your way, if the UFC asked you, who would be your preference?
There are three options in your fight. It's Rose, it's Tatiana, and Jonas.你想打给谁呀、
啊？我都可以啊，我觉得都可以，就看他们 UFC 怎么安排，我就跟谁打，对，或者让我打上一个级别的冠军也可以。
I can fight with anyone who UFC will arrange me to fight with, and even with someone from other categories. From I also can fight with them.
Oh, like are you referring to like Valentina Shevchenko, the 125 pound champion?
I'm talking about Valentina.
Yeah.
Yes, correct.
Wow. You would like that fight?
I want to fight in Abu Dhabi. Abu Dhabi. Ah, Abu Dhabi, you know who it is? That man, he always tells the women to fight. Then I want to go to Abu Dhabi to strengthen his waist.
I can fight even Sekura if he wants to fight.
Oh my gosh. This is the second time you bring up Sekura. You really seem to want that fight. You want to fight this man.
你这样是提的那个男的的名字，你真的想打他吗？
对，我要去抢他的腰带，我要去阿布扎比找他。
Yes, I want to go to Abu Dhabi and find him and take his belt.
Oh my gosh, why do you have such an issue with Henry Cejudo? Why is he the one that you keep talking about?
为什么你是这样给关于他一直在说跟他？为什么你们给他感觉怎么不太有？
因为他一直在。挑战我们女性运动员
，because he's always trying to challenge girls.
Yes, he is. You need to put, you know, I would just say I would favor you in that fight.
他说：“如果你这样子打他，他要支持你，不是他那个男人。如果你跟他真的发的，他会支持你。”
哦 ，Thank you. 我特别想，就是我有的时候会特别想他在那个。他在场上穿那个 bra 什么样的？
Sometimes I imagine how he's even how he's wearing bra and how he looks like in a bra.
Oh my gosh! All right, that is quite the visual. By the way, I just wanted to clear something up with you. Your record right now is 20-1, but I was told that your first fight, which was the loss, actually was an amateur fight that was stopped prematurely, and it shouldn't count. That you should actually be 20-0. You should be a perfect, undefeated 20-0. Is that accurate? And if so, why do they have it listed as a loss on your record?
Ah, he said because now your record is 20-1, and when he lost, this competition is not professional, and it seems like you can't put it on your record. What? 对这个感觉怎么样？你觉得要？
放我的专业，我觉得那个是不是一个专业的比赛，但是他已经过去了。那个时候就是非常不规范，然后就是三局的比赛，两局就宣布我输了。
嗯，
对，所以我就稀里糊涂我就输了。所以但是都过去了，我觉得无所谓了。
Well, yes, you said absolutely correctly that it's amateur fight, and I agree that it shouldn't be put on my record. But it's in the past already, and it's already happened. So let it be.
Okay. Well, I don't want to let it be. I want to rectify this. You should be 20-0, and I'm working hard to get this fixed for you. So I just want you to know this because that's not right. I think 20-0 sounds a lot better than 20-1. So leave it to me, and I'll get back to you on that. I also heard that you are working on your English. Is that accurate? How's the English? I heard you say, my name is Zhang Weili. I'm from China. Remember me. It was amazing. How well, you know, do you speak English now?
I'm studying very hard, man.
Would you like to say anything else to the American fans?
你想不想用英语说跟麦克方斯啊？
我就是对我非常希望我可以跟他们互动，然后跟他们交流。对，
现在呢？
现在我 ，I'm from China. My name is 张伟丽 Remember me.
Okay. It's a good catchphrase. It works. And so, what do you have planned now? I understand you have a big media tour. Can you tell us what you'll be doing and how big of a deal all of this in the next few days will be for you?
下几天你的安排是什么？
你说，我这几天我有很多那个媒体的采访，在中国非常非常多的媒体，然后都是国家的媒体，对，然后非常非常非常那个非常高，就是然后还有，因为现在中国的国家也在支持这个运动，我觉得对，明天我会从早上八点一直到晚上大概九点的那个媒体非常多，然后我会然后去阿布扎比也会有一些媒体。最近一周可能都要处理媒体上面的事情。
Well, next week I'm gonna have interviews, a lot of interviews, and the next two days is gonna be mostly Chinese media and Chinese state media, like hugest media sources, and because the MMA is growing in China, so a lot of people want to know about it. In Abu Dhabi, I also have some interview scheduled. A lot of interview for the next week.
Well, arranged. This is an amazing story, Zhang. I just want to congratulate you on making history. I think everyone will remember where they were on August 31st, 2019, when the first Chinese champion was crowned. And what a performance, 42-second victory over Jessica Andrade. Absolutely amazing. Congratulations sincerely on the victory, on making history. And again, thank you so much for doing this at 1:47 a.m. over there in China. We really appreciate it, and thank you for the time.
他说再次恭喜你，他觉得你打得特别好，每个人都会记得，因为他打得特别棒。然后他说谢谢你那么晚刚才跟我做的采访。
Welcome. You are welcome.
Amazing. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Nadia, great job. Thank you very, very much. Zhang, again, thank you. Thank you, Brian Butler, who set this up, and everyone back there in China. Safe travels, and we'll talk to you soon. All the best to you.
Thank you.
All right. There she is. The brand new UFC women's strawweight. Oh, she wanted to say something? Yes, please.
Yes, she said, thank you so much for the support.
Oh, no problem. We appreciate you very much. There she is, Zhang Weili. Peace. And what a moment that was. Again, August 31st, 2019, a moment that the UFC brass has been dreaming about for years. And I will just say this, in addition to how big that was historically, the reason I wanted to mention her connection with her manager is because in the fight game, this is how it works. You find someone, you discover them, you bring them to the dance, you bring them to the show, they become famous, and then someone swoops in and takes them away. And I saw the red light when Dana said, you know, oh, there's agents in LA that want to talk to her and all this stuff and more. She doesn't strike me as the kind of person that will leave now that she has made it, has become champion, has made history. She doesn't strike me as that kind of person. But in the fight game, we need to respect this. You need to respect the managers. You need to respect the people who groom the fighter and get them to the spot of becoming champion. And I hope that, you know, you see the vultures, you see the people out there. I hope that no one is trying to break that bond, because it is a very, in my opinion, a very important thing. Of course, if it's not a good relationship, a good partnership, then, you know, all bets are off. But in this particular case, Brian has been talking to me about Zhang for quite some time now and predicting that she would become champion, which, let's be honest, I mean, who predicted this? This woman debuted in the UFC 13 months ago. Like, it feels like she was shot out of a cannon. This wasn't the slow build. It's almost like they were looking for the Chinese star who could then become a contender, who could then become a champion. In this case, they found a great fighter who should be undefeated, became champion, and now they're working backwards. Now they're working to make her into a star. And she will become a star as a result of what's happened here. I mean, I've seen, you know, the the notes that, you know, she's being talked about 300 million times on social media. Social media much different in China than it is here in the Western part of the world. Instagram, Twitter, those things aren't very popular over there. There's all kinds of different things over there. I don't want to butcher their names, but those things are extremely different over there. The numbers are different. So it's a totally different ballgame. Don't go off of her Instagram followers or her Twitter followers. Totally different. But now you have someone who is the face of Chinese MMA, who is very likable, who is very good, who should be undefeated, who just starched a very dominant champion in 42 seconds. This is the dream. Like, I cannot overstate that enough. This is the dream. That was one of the greatest moments, the most historic moments in UFC history. And before the fight, I was getting people saying, oh, you're such a shill. Oh, you're building up a nothing card, a nothing fight. It doesn't mean anything. You cannot be more ignorant. You cannot be more wrong. You cannot be more dumb if you think that that moment wasn't as big as I am saying it is. It is gigantic. It is massive. It is going to open so many doors. Now, the big question is, if she loses in her first title defense, the majority of this will be for naught. If she goes on a semi-long run, let alone a long run as champion, this is potentially Yao Ming type of stuff. There's a reason why the Houston Rockets were sold for $3.75 billion when they were purchased by, coincidentally, a cousin of the Fertitta brothers, Tillman Fertitta, third cousin, I believe. It's because of Yao Ming. I mean, any NBA team will sell for a lot these days after Steve Ballmer bought the Clippers for $2 billion. $3.75 billion the Houston Rockets were sold because of how popular they are in China. China is where everyone wants to be. China is the great unknown in mixed martial arts. Because of the history of martial arts in China, because of the lineage, because of all that, they have always wanted this champion. And they got her. Zhang Weili. Remember her name. Trust me. This is someone who will be one of the faces of this sport if she can hang on to that title for a very long time. And the impact that she can have could potentially be greater than any champion we've ever seen in this sport. This is big business. This is huge. This is gigantic. I can't overstate enough. I got goosebumps watching that. What a performance. What a win. What a moment. It's going to be so interesting to see where they go from here because it's the great unknown for the UFC as well. All right, you know, I'm sure you're expecting me to say what a big mistake it would be if you bring it to the U.S. the next fight. They almost don't have a choice. There's so much red tape involved with bringing an event to China. So much politics, you almost have to bring her to the U.S. next and then buy yourself some time to bring her back to China if she defends the title successfully later next year. I think the perfect scenario would be if Michelle Waterson wins, you could do Waterson versus Zhang Weili somewhere in America with a big Chinese population. It's going to be fascinating. But what a moment that was. I hope you witnessed it live. If not, I hope you watched it afterwards. This is a fighter that is worth watching and one of the best stories of the year. And by the way, massive props to Jessica Andrade for handling the loss the way she did. All class, a lot of grace, great sportsmanship. She did not pout. She almost seemed happy, dare I say, for Zhang Weili. So it's going to be really interesting to see where they go from here with her. She's going on this media tour around China. She's then going to Abu Dhabi. Clearly the UFC recognizes how big this is. You know, can they make it happen the right way? Can they make her as visible as possible in China, as popular as possible in China? And will that translate over to the United States? I'm not under any, you know, false illusions. I know if you put her in the main event of a pay-per-view right now, it's not going to sell a million pay-per-views, but that's why I call it the great unknown. It's like the Instagram followers and the social media stuff. We don't really understand what that means there, here. So can they take what is happening over there and bring it here? We shall find out. But that was really cool. I appreciate her doing that so early in the morning. And I wish the best to her and her team. Interesting times ahead. All right, let me tell you about today's lineup because I kind of skipped all of that since we didn't want to keep her waiting. At around 4:05 Eastern time, we're going to be joined by the Motown phenom himself, Kevin Lee. He has been, you know, I thought of Kevin Lee recently because I was like, wow, Kevin Lee lost to RDA and, we kind of didn't hear from him for a while, right? And on social media, he didn't do much, not many posts, pretty quiet. So I reached out to him. Seems like he's in a good spot. Seems like he's ready to return to action. Wanted to catch up with Kevin Lee. We'll do so at 4:05. In case you missed it last week, it was officially announced that Darren Till will in fact be moving up to 185 pounds, and he will be doing so on November 2nd, Madison Square Garden, against Kelvin Gastelum. Still feel torn on this fight. I'm so happy he's moving up. I'm so happy he's decided to do this. But is this the right fight? Clearly, who are we to tell Darren Till what's the right fight, what's not the right fight? His path, especially as of late, has been unconventional. But this is a big leap for him. Lest we forget, Kelvin Gastelum is one half of the fight of the year thus far. And there's only 3 months left. His fight against Israel Adesanya, in my opinion, right now is still the fight of the year. He was supposed to fight Robert Whittaker, the champion, in February. He's arguably top three middleweight. You're jumping in there against the top three middleweight. That's a big jump, but that's how Darren Till rolls. Tony Ferguson will be doing a rare interview on today's show. As you know, he doesn't do a lot of interviews. I've been trying to talk to him for a while, and he finally said yes. I'm looking forward to talking to El Kakui at 305. Where does he fit into the lightweight picture? What does he think about both Khabib Nurmagomedov and Dustin Poirier, who are, of course, fighting this Saturday in Abu Dhabi, saying that he's undeniably the number one contender at 155 pounds. How is he doing? What does he make of Conor McGregor's recent comments about him? All that and more will hopefully be addressed with Tony Ferguson at 3:05. At 2:45, we'll talk to the birthday boy, Dominic Cruz. Today is Dominic Cruz's birthday. He just landed in Abu Dhabi moments ago, he told me, and we'll talk to him about not only that card and his birthday, but more importantly right now for him, Henry Cejudo calling him out. Henry Cejudo saying that he's a tune-up fight, that he wants an easy fight to get back in there post-shoulder surgery. Coincidentally, Cruz coming off shoulder surgery as well. He is, without a doubt, the most decorated bantamweight champion in the history of the sport. Cejudo wants him. It would be a battle of Arizona, if you will. They're both proud Arizona natives. We'll see what he has to say about all that. Speaking of someone coming back, Carlos Condit is coming back. He is resuming his career, and he will be fighting Mickey Gall on December 7th in Washington, D.C. Interesting matchup. Didn't see this one coming. Vet versus youngster, climbing the ranks. What does Carlos Condit think about all of that? Where's he at in his career? We'll talk to him at around 2:30 Eastern time. 2:15, we'll talk to Joanne Calderwood, Dr. Neville herself. She is in Abu Dhabi right now. She has a massive fight against Andrea Lee. It is the featured prelim this Saturday. In case you didn't hear the news, the UFC 242 pay-per-view airs at 2 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN Plus pay-per-view if you're here in the United States. 2 p.m. Eastern in the eastern part of the U.S., 11 a.m. Pacific, and that's 10 p.m. in Abu Dhabi, and she's in the feature prelim. The prelims, by the way, are airing on both FX, which is now part of the Disney family, and ESPN Plus. So no ESPN prelims. Why? College football, Saturday, very busy time. So she went from the curtain jerker on a winning streak in Chicago against Caitlin Chookagian in a potential number one contender fight, to now coming off a loss and fighting the surging Andrea Lee, who's won, I believe, 8 in a row, and she's in the feature prelim. Go figure. How funny is that? And in a matter of moments, we're also going to be joined by Paul Felder, who competes in the co-main event this Saturday at UFC 242 against Edson Barbosa, a rematch of a fight that happened 4 years ago and also happened to be Paul Felder's first pro loss. He was hit in the groin and has said in interviews recently that he actually was peeing blood. He was hit in the groin in the first round, certainly affected his performance, fought very well. It was a big jump for him fighting Edson Barbosa, and he said in recent interviews that he was peeing blood. I think this is a fascinating matchup because Felder, in my opinion, has improved exponentially since that fight. Barbosa is very good. I don't know if he's improved as much. By the way, Felder's in Abu Dhabi right now. Do we have this clip of him with Bilal Muhammad before we get to him? This is an amazing clip. Bilal Muhammad, his friend and teammate, also fighting on the card. And apparently he brought a friend to go introduce him to Paul Felder in his room. And they pretended like he was some kind of important sheik, and told him to kiss his hand. Paul was going to do it. It was very awkward. This is a great video. Check it out. He posted it yesterday.
Hey.
Hey.
This is Prince Abraham.
Hey. So, how are you, man?
Pretty good.
For real?
Yeah.
That is amazing. So he thought that he had to do it. You know, you got to respect the culture. And he was about to do it. So a good prank there from Bilal Muhammad, who again is also competing on the card this week, has brought about a lot of memories for me. I've been to Abu Dhabi once. I was there for UFC 112. I may share those memories, time permitting, later on in the program. That was, without a doubt, I would say top three most memorable trips of my career. April of 2010, if you recall, Flash Entertainment, the subsidiary of the Abu Dhabi government, had just purchased 10% of the UFC 3 months prior. And so they brought this big event to Yaz Island, just outside of Abu Dhabi. They built a makeshift stadium in the desert next to like the Ferrari world. The main event was Anderson Silva against Damian Maia for the, it was supposed to be Anderson Silva against Vitor Belfort. Belfort got hurt, so it ended up being Anderson Silva against Damian Maia for the middleweight title. Also, Frankie Edgar fought BJ Penn. Hensel Gracie made his debut against Matt Hughes, lost that fight. Frankie Edgar made history by defeating BJ Penn in somewhat of a shocker, won via decision. And then, of course, the main event that just completely went off the rails and was one of the more bizarre scenes that I've ever witnessed. It was so interesting because it sort of left a sour taste in everyone's mouth. This was supposed to be the big unveiling of the UFC in front of the United Arab Emirates, and there were a lot of important people there. And then the main event happens, and it's the pound-for-pound king, and he just kind of fights in a very bizarre way, and I don't know, just was acting a fool, and it was just a very strange scene, made even more unique by the fact that there were only three North American journalists who traveled to cover the event, myself, Kevin Ioli, and Mike Straka. And I remember I started the night with 4,000 Twitter followers. I ended the night with 7,000 Twitter followers because post-fight press conference wasn't streamed. And I started to live tweet some of the big moments. There was a lot of tension. It was in the afternoon in the United States. Everyone wanted to know what would happen to Anderson, how Dana would react to Anderson Silva and all that. And I started just live streaming the moments. And I remember even Joe Lauzon and Patrick Cote in particular following me on Twitter and thinking like, wow, fighters are actually even paying attention to what I'm tweeting here. And to gain 3,000 followers in one day was a pretty big deal. That's how big that moment was. Of course, now everything is live streamed. Everything, you know, even the open workouts will be live streamed tomorrow in Abu Dhabi. But that was definitely an event that I will never forget. Just being there, the tension afterwards in a tent outside. Each fighter had their own trailer, or they were sharing them with like two or three fighters. There was no locker room because they just built this thing and then they tore it down not that long after. And they're doing the same this time. Like they just erect these arenas outdoors and then they just take them away. It's a crazy thing. The wealth there is unbelievable. And so all the fighters were in these trailers. So we do these post-fight interviews outside under the lights, sweaty fighters, super humid. And the post-fight press conference was in a tent, and, which is, if you cover MMA, you know, like now T-Mobile Arena, the post-fight press conference is in a tent because for some reason they didn't build a proper press room there for combat sports events. But it was super humid. It was super weird. It was super awkward. And I was tweeting away. Just a very memorable event to cover. So I will not be going to Abu Dhabi this time. But just the UFC being back there. I know they were back there in 2014 for a fight night. But back there for a big show, you know, a pay-per-view. And, you know, all the hoopla that surrounds a pay-per-view has made me very nostalgic for April of 2010, UFC 112. It's obviously going to be a very big deal with Khabib Nurmagomedov, fighting in front of many of his fellow Muslims. It's going to be a great scene. That's the main event. Khabib versus Poirier. Co-main event, as I said, is Edson Barbosa versus Paul Felder 2. And Paul Felder is now kind enough to join us via the phone from Abu Dhabi. Paul, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm really well. I know it's a bit of a pain to connect from over there to us here, so I appreciate you doing this very much.
Yeah, no problem. The FaceTime and Skype stuff is a little limited to not at all over here.
No problem. It's great to have you on the show. By the way, what has it been like so far? Is this your first time in Abu Dhabi? And if so, you know, just the culture shock, the differences, what has it been like for you thus far?
You know, it's definitely unique and different, and more than anything, though, it's just adjusting to the time change and the jet lag for me right now. as far as the culture and all that, everybody's been really open and excited that we're here and, you know, volunteering to get drivers for people and take us around and show us places. And, obviously, I got my teammate, my buddy and good friend, Bilal Muhammad, who's with me. So, you know, it's very exciting. Exciting for him to be here, so I've kind of been going around with him and his family that's here. So it's been a lot of fun, just a little exhausting the first couple of days. Hopefully, trying to get my sleep back on track starting tonight and tomorrow into the weight cut, and you know, cruise down to 155 and put on a show for these people.
We just showed a clip while we were waiting to connect with you of Bilal playing this prank on you yesterday and almost getting you to kiss this guy's hand. What was that? So what did you think? You thought that guy was like an important sheik or something?
I didn't at first. I thought it was just one of the guys that he had met that was, you know, kind of showing him around, and he's from Abu Dhabi. And I know a guy had reached out to him and wanted to help out and show us a bit of the city. So that's who I'm assuming it was. And that's who it was. But, you know, Bilal loves to play jokes and mess with us, man. And he comes up there and he sold it pretty well at first, and he's not my prince is what I'm thinking. I'm like, I shouldn't have to kiss anybody's hand. If you're not my leader, you're not, you know, it's not my culture. I shook your hand and being respectful, you're in my room. So when I gave him the double take, I saw them start to break, and I was like, all right, I'm getting played a trick on. I didn't even know Jared had his phone out. I didn't even see him. He's sneaky with that.
It was well done. It was certainly well done. By the way, when they booked this fight, you versus Barbosa 2 in Abu Dhabi, initially, like, if you see the way the card is constructed, obviously it's a lot of Muslim fighters, a lot of Russian fighters, and then there's you versus Barbosa, who have no connection to the area. Were you a little surprised that they put you guys there?
Yeah, 100%. yeah, neither one of us have anything to do with, you know, a Brazilian who's living in Florida and, you know, some redheaded white dude who's lives in Philly and trains in Milwaukee. It's like, yeah, sure, send them to Abu Dhabi. I had been asking for either, you know, I wanted a five-round fight on one of these smaller fight night cards or a co-main event on something. I didn't think it would end up being this card. I had counted this card completely off my list of options. You know, it was never even mentioned. We talked about Boston. We talked about Australia. We talked about a lot of other places that Sean had mentioned. And then out of nowhere, I was on my way to Vegas to do my last Contender Series job, or at least what ended up being my last Contender Series job. And that's when they offered us this fight. And it was kind of a no-brainer. It's like, well, it's a huge opportunity. Of course, I'm going to take it. I didn't expect to be going to Abu Dhabi, but hey, not every day you get to fly to Abu Dhabi and fight in a stadium that just got built. You know, it's insane.
I remember when we spoke in June in Chicago, you were part of the first ever historic Helwani Knows Roadshow Trivia Challenge. Valiant effort, by the way, but fell just short. I'm sure one day you will get the rematch. And you were a little frustrated that you couldn't get a fight. You wanted Gaethje. You wanted all these guys. In the end, are you happy with this? I mean, obviously the fight is here and you've obviously made, you know, you've come to terms with the fact that you're fighting this guy again, but when you were offered Edson Barbosa a rematch against a guy who beat you, you know, your first pro loss, all that stuff, somewhat controversial, the groin strike, were you happy with where, because I didn't see this rematch coming now. I'm wondering what you thought when you were offered it.
Yeah, I kind of did. The only reason I didn't see it coming is because, you know, over the years, me and Edson have kind of been teammates and become pretty friendly with each other. But we hadn't trained in years, you know. We were in different camps and things like that. So it was a fight that was very much on my radar, you know, because when you're number 10, floating that number 10, number 9 area, the guys above you, a lot of times to get that jump up in competition, you're going to have to take guys coming off of losses. That's the only way sometimes you're going to get those top 7, top 5 guys to take you on when you're lower ranked than them. So I was always watching the guys ranked above me that were also coming off losses. Obviously, you try to go after the guys that are coming off the wins, the Justin Gaethjes and things like that, but it doesn't always pan out that way. Those guys want to move up the rankings. They want to fight the guys above them, and it makes sense. I've never said that there's a problem with that. Because when I won in Phoenix, I made it clear that I wanted either one of those guys, and I knew, in my heart, that that Justin won, the fight that I was going to get was probably more realistically going to be Edson.
I said before you came on that I feel like you have improved exponentially since that first fight. And this is no knock on Edson. I just think he's still really good, but hasn't made the kind of leaps that you have over the past 4 years. Is that a fair statement on my part? Do you agree or disagree?
I mean, I agree. Yeah, I'm sure he would disagree. Obviously, his coaches would tell us otherwise, right? But from my point of view, I have to agree with that. I think whether he's made some changes or not, I think I have 100% made quite a lot of changes and leaps and bounds in my career and how I perform in there. You know, and I think a lot of it has to do with just experience and time. You know, it's been my 13th or 14th UFC fight. You know, I've faced top competition now. It's nothing new. This is, you know, next level kind of attention that we're getting here because of the scenario and the card that we're on. But it's not my first rodeo in having, you know, a big spot on a card or a big name or somebody in the rankings now. Whereas the first time we fought, that was all extremely brand new to me. I'd never experienced anything like that before.
I saw in an interview that you did recently, I think it was with MMAfighting.com, where you said that you were peeing blood after the fight because of the groin strike. How bad did that hurt?
Well, I hurt really bad, but I mean, Edson also kicked me about 100 times into my body too. So I'm sure it was a combination of those factors of the groin strike and the, you know, the shots to the body. We did some damage to each other in that fight. But yeah, I was beat up, you know. I handled it well when I was in there. It was one of those fights when I was in there, I actually felt, other than the groin strike, but as far as the actual fight itself, the contact, I felt pretty good in there. I remember it was as soon as I got backstage for that fight is when all that kind of stuff really set in. Adrenaline's a hell of a thing, man.
Correct me if I'm wrong, I believe this is the first rematch of your career, right?
Yeah, 100%. Definitely the first rematch I've ever had. And I remember that was something that I was really curious about. And excited about, you know, I feel like all the greats and people that make it really far in this sport, one of the intriguing and exciting things along their career that you remember about them is trilogies or rematches or avenging losses and things like that. So that's the kind of the way I look at this. This is a stepping stone for me to kind of cement myself as, you know, a really top tier guy if I can go in there and take out somebody that took me out before and adjust and make things different and avenge my first loss. You know, like I've made it very clear that there's no bad blood between me and Barboza, but the way we both fight is very violent. It's very aggressive. So I want to get that one back. And, you know, I would feel really, really good about myself and where I stand as a lightweight fighter in this division if I can go in there and get that one back. That one in particular, because it was the first loss. It was definitely the hardest pill to swallow because once you lose once, it's not that they become easier, but at least you've tasted it before, you know. So that one really was hard for me to get over. I can remember even though it was 4 years ago.
How long did it take for you to get over it? Do you recall?
Well, unfortunately, I did it all wrong, Ariel. I lost, and instead of taking that time and adjusting things in my training camp and healing up properly, that's when I decided I'm just going to jump right back in the cage and go fight Ross Pearson in 4 weeks. And I was still icing. I remember taking an ice bath to get the swelling out of my legs because I booked the fight with Ross, and I still was limping when I took that fight. I still had bruises on my legs. And I gained, you know, probably 30 pounds already of eating and drinking beer, not thinking I was going to fight for months after that fight. And stupid and just, I wanted to try to avenge that loss right away and get back in there, and I took that fight and then lost that one. So I did just about the worst thing that you can do after taking your first loss like that.
How about your current health? Obviously, we know about the collapsed lung and everything you went through, you know, in post your last fight against James Vick. How are you feeling now? Any concerns in the training camp? Any issues? Any concerns for the fight itself?
No, not at all. I feel 100%. I feel... You know, I hate to say it because everybody's always saying this. Of course, I'm going to tell you I'm in great shape. But, I mean, I did change some things. I'm always changing things in my training camps. you know, first of all, it starts with my guys back in Philly. Before I even go into the real heart of my training camps now, I've got a good group of guys now back in Philadelphia and in New Jersey and things like that. And always with my strength coach, Rich Poehler, back home, keeping me strong the whole time. And now I added Matt Gifford from Next Level in Milwaukee, who's just a phenomenal strength and conditioning coach who I worked with. He actually made me warm up, stretch. So physically, you know, at 35, I feel more limber. I feel just physically stronger and even bigger. You know, I had to lose. I think I gained a little more muscle in this one, and I lost a lot of fat. I mean, I'm down probably below 6% body fat already going into this weight cut. So very lean, very strong, very hungry in more ways than one at the moment. But I feel great and no lung issues whatsoever. The forearm obviously is healed up good. We saw that held up just fine in the James Vick fight. So. No, nothing. There will be no excuses whatsoever, no matter what goes down on Saturday night. I'm primed, in shape, and ready to go for this one.
One thing that I remember from UFC 112 in Abu Dhabi, had the pleasure of being there live, and I remember how sweaty the guys got very early on in the fight. It was very humid. It was in April as opposed to September, but you're outdoors, you're in the desert. It's just a different type of climate than in an arena. Are you prepared for that? Have you ever competed outdoors before in any kind of climate close to that? I mean, you guys, I suspect you there won't be a lot of grappling in this fight, but still, it's a different type of environment.
Yeah, no, I, you know, there's nothing that can compare to the heat that I've faced when I walk outside of this hotel right now. Right now, it is like getting smacked in the face with a warm, wet blanket, and, you know, you're in a steam room and you can't breathe. It's horrible. But we're told we're in air conditioning and they're going to be having it closed up. So we'll see how finished this place is. It's supposed to be complete, but, you know, hopefully I haven't seen it. So I'm just being told all this stuff that it's a good to go. So hopefully we're not fighting in this weather, because I'll tell you what, I'm not going to be the only one having trouble on Saturday night if there's open air at all and we're not air conditioned, because it is hot.
Oh, wow. So that's interesting. This time they put a roof. Maybe they learned their lesson from the last time. The last time it was open.
They did. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
They did. And Ariel, in this time, like their season right now, this is their dead season here apparently because of how hot it is. I mean, we're talking like with the humidity index, we're talking like feels like 130 during the day.
Wow. 130 Fahrenheit.
Yeah. There's no way.
That's insane. That is unbelievable.
If we fought outside in this right now, I mean, nobody would last a round out there.
Okay. Well, that is good to know. I didn't know that. I didn't know they put – it's amazing that they're able to build these arenas and then just essentially get rid of them in a matter of months. It's unbelievable what goes on over there.
Rip them down.
Yeah. It's truly amazing. Well, yeah, I wish you the best, Paul. Thank you for doing this. I'm really looking forward to this fight. A bit of a, I don't want to call it a tournament per se, but there's three really important lightweight fights at the top of the card. Islam Makhachev against Davi Ramos, your fight. And then, of course, the big one, Khabib versus Dustin. Last thing, you know, I'll ask you to put the analyst hat on. Do you think Dustin can get it done, or are you favoring Khabib?
I'm favoring Khabib, but I do think, man, I do think he can get it done. I think he's really talented. And he proves that time and time again. Every time he gets in there, we doubt that guy. You know, he goes in there and he finishes people. He finishes tough people like Justin Gaethje, Eddie Alvarez. You know what I mean? These are tough guys to get out of there. Max Holloway, you know, he goes and beats him in a decision. It's like, no matter how hurt you get, Dustin, he seems to just dig down deep and come back. So, I'm hoping that whatever happens to me on Saturday night, I'm able to at least sit back and take in that main event, because I think it's going to be very interesting.
Yes, I agree. Great stuff, Paul. Thank you very much, and good luck to you on Saturday. Looking forward to it.
Hey, man, it's going to be a good one. It's going to be a good one.
I can't wait. There he is, Paul Felder, the Irish Dragon, joining us from Abu Dhabi. Let us stay in Abu Dhabi right now. Waste no time. Let's say hello to our old pal, Joanne Calderwood, who is also competing on the card. She joins us via the magic of Skype. And look at this. I was told, Joanne, that the connection is horrible, that no one can connect to the internet. You can't use Skype. Look at you, crystal clear. How did you get it done?
So I've been on Skype, and I've done the whole echo check, and then I called, I Skyped Danny, my manager, to make sure everything was good to go. So finally, this could be the one.
What a pro you are. It's amazing. I appreciate you going the extra mile and getting that done, and also doing this somewhat late over there in Abu Dhabi. How is Abu Dhabi treating you? Is this your first time there?
Yeah, I've only been to Dubai for a stopover when I was going to Thailand. So yeah, I'm actually getting to explore the country a little bit.
What do you make of it?
It's interesting. Everyone's really nice, and it's very, very hot. But I love the hot, so it's all good.
I was told, I don't know if you were told this as well, but I was told that part of the deal, you know, they signed this 5-year deal to bring these events to Abu Dhabi and have Khabib on the card, that part of the deal was that they wanted female fights, that there needed to be at least several, you know, 3 or 4 female fights on this particular card. They wanted to showcase the females. Did you hear that as well? And, you know, being in the most high-profile female fight on the card, do you view this as some kind of compliment?
Yeah, I hadn't heard that. That's awesome to hear. And I'm glad that I'm part of it, especially for their first show. I was kind of worried about, like, the uniform and stuff, but I got told that you've just to wear your normal uniform. I'm probably still going to wear my rash guard, cover my shoulders just out of respect, and for my open workout tomorrow as well, cover up. So that's really nice to hear, and I'm just grateful to be part of this moving forward.
So explain this to me, because I remember talking to you before the Chicago fight. You were a little perturbed that you were in the quote-unquote curtain jerker, the first fight, in a very important fight, a potential number one contender fight. Unfortunately, that didn't go your way. Now, here you are coming off a loss, and you're in the feature prelim. How does this make any sense?
I told you it's because of her style. Like, you know, and I just watched the fight a few days ago before I left, and I was like, man, no wonder, like, I wasn't excited to fight her, just her style. And I was like, yeah, I could count in my hands how many times she hurt me. You know, she threw a lot and stuff, but none of that happened. None of that hit me or hurt me. And, you know, I'm not interested in that. I only face someone that's in there to get down and dirty and just, look for the kill. And her style is like, she doesn't want to engage.
Is that, like, your biggest takeaway from the fight? Like, afterwards, were you frustrated not so much about your performance, but you were frustrated about the fact that she didn't want to engage? Did you feel like you could have done more had she been more willing to engage?
Yeah, it's hard to, like, you know, this is probably a bad part in my fighting style. Like, I sometimes need to be hit to kind of, like, want to, like, kill someone, but also it's like I felt like I was sparring in there, and I just felt like it wasn't an exciting fight. And I don't know, I think I do look back and think that I should have just went through more, but at the time I felt like I was doing enough, and just trying to deal with that challenge of being in there with someone shadow boxing in front of me.
Do you feel like that was a major setback for you, or do you feel like you beat someone like Andrea Lee, who's on this impressive streak, you're right back in the same spot, that you'll be as close to the title shot as you were going into that fight back in June?
Yeah, I feel like anyone in this division, like, it's the new division, so it's still kind of being worked on. So I feel like you just have to, I'm not focusing on the title shot, you know, that kind of, also, what I done last fight and last fight camp was focusing on the possibility of that, and I should have been concentrating on all these little battles I have before I get the title shot. And I do feel like if I'm going to have a good performance, then maybe, but try not to see past Saturday and just to keep my eyes on the prize, which is winning on Saturday.
Have you watched a lot of Andrea? And if so, are you impressed with what she's done as of late?
yeah, like, I'm super excited for this fight. I knew her from our Invicta days, and I like watching her. She's exciting. Obviously, she's also a stand-up fighter. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this matchup, and I feel like they always make great fights, and this will be a great fight for me and for the fans.
By the way, have you met? I remember when I was in Abu Dhabi. I hate that I keep bringing this up, but it was a trip that stayed with me. I met a lot of Scottish people there. Have you run into a lot of Scottish people there?
No, just a group of guys today that were leaving, and they said hello, and but I didn't. We didn't really interact.
Okay.
Because they just said hello, Joanne, and like walked past me, so they didn't stop and chat. But yeah, someone on Instagram said that I should hook up with someone in the Ferrari world from Chris House, that's where I grew up from. So I've only met those guys, and apart from that.
Okay.
So hopefully, I've only really been here for 2 days, so.
Yeah, and how are you doing with the jet lag?
I'm doing okay. Like, I saw Paul was on before me, and I was like, oh, come on, I could have been on, and because usually I go to my bed at 10 o'clock.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. I'm trying to stay up later and then try and deal with the jet lag that way. But yeah, it's gone so far so good.
You could blame Danny Rubenstein for that, your manager. He's insisted on this time slot.
Oh, he did?
Yes. He said this would be prime time.
Maybe he's working on me being up later.
Yes. Well, that is important. I mean, you would be fighting almost at exactly this time on Saturday because of the time difference. It will be probably around like 9:30 their time, 1:30 our time. And obviously there's, you know, I appreciate you saying this because I've heard this from other fighters who were so close to a title shot saying, now I just have to stop thinking about the title shot. And then you stop thinking about it and then it comes, right? It's a weird thing like that. If you stop focusing on it, you just let the career play out, it comes. But I'm certain that you have still been following Valentina, and I was just curious what you thought of her last fight, which she was somewhat criticized for. Liz was criticized as well, but Valentina for maybe not engaging like we talked about with Caitlin. Do you feel like that criticism was warranted, or do you think it was somewhat similar to your fight where it takes two to tango and, you know, some of that criticism has to go Liz's way as well?
Yeah, I just feel there's a lot of pressure, and we've seen even like the past two UFCs where they've had the title, and then like DC and then Jessica Andrade, like losing her title just at the weekend there. There's so much pressure to perform and at the end of the day to win and keep your belt. And us doing MMA, it's like a very, very hard sport because you go in there and you can make the tiniest mistake and that could cause you all these years of work. And that is a lot of pressure to go in with. And I feel like sometimes in your career that sometimes your fight, and especially for me, sometimes I feel like there's been too much pressure there, and you kind of go in there and you forget all the years of that you've put into the sport, and you're worrying about it getting taken away from you because you could be like a step away from the title, or you could lose your title. So there's these little mind battling going off in the back of your head, and then obviously UFC wants you to put on great performances, but yeah, like you say, it takes two to tango, and sometimes you can go in there and like from my last fight I wanted to go in there and like bang, like every fight that's what I want to do, but sometimes people use footwork to not engage, and or someone takes you down. So there's a lot of things that can happen in this sport.
By the way, I noticed on Instagram that you've now capitalized the WOOD at the end of your last name. Is there something that you want to tell us? What's going on with that?
No, I just, we're Team Wood, and I guess like Calder, he wants me to hyphenate when we do eventually get married, but that's not going to happen. So that I'm Calderwood Wood.
Yeah, that would be incredible, by the way. That would be amazing. Joanne Calderwood Wood. Double Wood.
Yeah. He's loving Fight Week with me because everywhere we go, like, people always think he's a fighter. And like, the first time we were like, no, it's actually her that's fighting. And they just like look like, yeah, okay. And then, so now we're just keeping it going. And this week's been no different. So he's loving this bit.
So they think you're the wife accompanying the fighter?
Wife, yeah. Just
girlfriend.
Wave, maybe.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, your coach is a very well-built man. He could, you know, he could pass as a fighter, no doubt about that. By the way, I saw you guys were at Warner Brothers World. Is that cool? Is that fun? I didn't know they had one of those over in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, it's only like 10 minutes from the hotel. It was really, really cool. That's a good thing about fighting at flyweight as well. I don't really need to stress too much on the weight cut, and I get to do fun things like this. And yeah, it was really cool. I wanted to go to the Ferrari World and do the world's fastest roller coaster and the world's tallest, but we decided we'll leave that till Sunday.
Yes, okay.
Till after the fight.
Yes, be safe for now. Hope everything goes well. And Saturday is a very good night for you. It's always great to connect, Joanne. I appreciate it very much. I wish you the best. Unfortunately, I know you're sad to hear this. I will not be at the fight this weekend, but considering how June went, maybe that's for the best. Maybe we start a new streak here and I stay back for this one so everything goes well for you on Saturday.
I guess we'll soon find out.
Yes. Well, thank you for doing this. All the best to you and good luck on Saturday. All right, there she goes, Joanne Calderwood. Thank you very much to her. Big fight for her on Saturday against Andrea Lee. Featured prelim, again, that's taking place on FX and or ESPN Plus this Saturday afternoon. Her fight at around 1:30 p.m. Eastern time. Okay, other big news from this past week. Carlos Condit is returning. He's returning on December 7th, to be exact, against Mickey Gall. A fight that sort of came out of nowhere. It's happening in Washington, and we're kind enough to be joined right now by Carlos Condit. It's been a while since we spoke to him. The natural born killer joining us on the program right now. Carlos, how are you?
I'm doing well, Ariel. What's going on?
It's been a while, my friend. It's great to have you on the show again. Thank you very much for doing this. When I saw this fight initially, you know, come through the wire, so to speak, I was like, oh, wow, I didn't really see that one coming. What was your reaction when you were offered Mickey?
You know, I've been looking for a fight for a little while, and I know that my management has been, been pushing to get me booked. And after that last one, I guess that's what the matchmaker saw in the future.
Why has it taken you so long to return to get a fight?
I don't know, honestly. I was looking to fight in sometime in the fall, and that didn't happen. You know, the fight cards book up pretty quick, so we've been looking for one, and this is what came to fruition.
How aware are you of Mickey Gall, of his story, how he got into the UFC, and have you seen his last couple fights?
I saw the last one.
Okay.
I'm fairly aware of him. Yeah, I mean, he fought CM Punk initially, and then he's had some success, and then he fought Diego Sanchez two fights ago, and then had that decision victory recently.
And so this feels, I call this like the classic Joe Silva fight, because you have like the super young guy who's looking for a big name and the veteran who's looking to get back on track. Do you feel like you are being used to build up Mickey, or do you view this as an opportunity to get back on track? Like, how do you view this matchup? Because again, I don't think a lot of people saw this particular pairing in the works.
I'm looking at it more from a style match. I think that it's an exciting fight. You know, he's got a depth of knowledge. You know, he's a skilled guy. He comes to fight. So do I. So, I mean, that's kind of, you know, of course I've been on a skid. I'm going to obviously try to get back into, back on the winning track. But For me, it's really a style matchup. I think it's going to be a hell of a fight.
So you mentioned the quote unquote skid. How do you feel right now about your career? Like, where's your confidence at mentally? How do you feel as you prepare for this camp?
I feel good. I've had to rearrange some stuff with regards to my training. I feel like I had some of the elements that I needed, but I had to reformulate a little bit. And now I feel good. I feel like I can get out there and compete with the best of, you know, the best in the world on any given night. But recently, you know, that I, you know, training camps have been going well. Things have been clicking in preparation. And then, you know, just something wasn't coming together on fight night. And, you know, that's how it goes sometimes. Obviously not, you know, shoot, I think I'm 5 or 6 in a row, you know, when it comes to losses. But, you know, I feel like that's behind me, and you know, any day, any given fight, I can turn that around and you know, get back to my old form.
There's always this weird conversation that happens when a fighter goes on a skid at the end of their career, and especially one who's had a career like yours. Do you hear that stuff? Like, it seems like every fight is a referendum on their career, and you have this conversation after, like, oh, they should retire, they should this, that, and it always feels very uncomfortable because, I mean, like in your particular case, you're one of the most beloved fighters in the history of the sport. And yet fans want to, I think, remember you as that guy who, you know, won the WC title and the interim belt and all that stuff. Afterwards, do you pay attention to that stuff? Does it hurt you? Does it affect you? How do you deal with that?
It's definitely something that I'm cognizant of and something that I feel, you know, very personally. You know, those are also questions that I think fighters go through in a very personal way themselves, right? They're the ones who are actually putting it out there, putting it on the line, suffering the physical and emotional repercussions of the sport. But I go back to the fact that I still know that I have it. I still know that all I got to do is go out there and compete the way that I know that I can. And that's all there is to it. And, you know, I've put in preparation and I've trained hard for my, you know, last, you know, 5, 6 fights that I've lost. And, you know, that's all I can do. I just need to get out there, you know, pull the trigger. Sometimes I think we overthink it as fighters. I think we get in that skid and it's that psychological rut that, can be absolutely detrimental. It could be the end of a fighter. But, I also feel like on the other side of that, there's been a lot of guys that have had incredible comebacks and really turned it around.
Do you feel like the victory, the feeling of getting your hand raised, the feeling of a training camp coming to fruition and then ending on a good note, like, is that almost like a drug feeling that you're searching for again? And because it's been so long, like, it just that desire to get it continues to grow and grow.
I think the fight itself, the intensity of the buildup and getting in there and actually doing the thing is more, you know, quote unquote, the drug feeling, the high that you're talking about, for me anyway. You know, and obviously when you lose, you know, you suffer that hangover but you know, if you win, not so much. But, you know, obviously, you know, I don't have to tell you a win is much needed in my career. We all, I mean, you know, anybody, I know this as well as anybody else.
Would you go as far as to say this fight against Mickey is a must win?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I must win because, you know, I don't want to put my time and effort into something and then just you know, have another situation where I fall short, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's huge on a lot of different levels for my career personally. But if I dwell on all that and I'm caught in that mindset and I'm just worried about losing and all that shit, then I'm not you know, then that's not really the reason why I got into this. You know, I still enjoy training. I'm still learning. I still have a passion for this. And when I focus on that, that's where I need to be. And that's the mindset that's going to bring me success.
You mentioned some changes. Are you talking about, like, in terms of coaching, in terms of the way you approach training camp? What in particular did you mean?
I've been just training in some different places. You know, there's a wealth of knowledge here in Albuquerque, a lot of different schools. So I've been training in some different places here. I'm also probably going to do some traveling to some different camps. My camp is still going to be centered at Jackson Wink. But I'm absolutely going to get some work in other places.
Which other camps are you able to share?
Until I actually get out there and work on it.
Okay.
Ask me closer to the fight and I'll let you know where I went. Cause it's still up in the air. I got a couple of different places that I'm wanting to go visit. And then here in Albuquerque, I've been doing, working at a different Jackson's gym, a Jackson's affiliate. And then I've been doing some work with the 10th Planet gym here in Albuquerque.
And, like, did you do that sort of thing prior to the last fight against Chiesa, or is this the first time that you'll try out multiple gyms in the midst of a training camp?
I was, but I'm going to expand on that.
Okay. You just kind of like the feel of getting different looks, different perspectives?
Yes, absolutely.
And so, you know, when you prepare for someone like Mickey, this, you know, obviously for him, this is a big deal. This is, I mean, I would say the CM Punk was high profile. The Punk fight was high profile, but, like, in terms of name, he's never fought anyone quite like you before. And do you feel like for him, this will be like, he's never been in there with a Carlos Condit. You know what I mean? And doesn't matter what kind of streak you're on, you're Carlos Condit. Are you banking on the fact that this might be like a little bit of a step up for him that he's not quite ready for? Do you feel like he is someone that's at your level?
You know, that remains to be seen. You know, when we step in there, then we're going to find out. But yeah, I mean, it's obviously as young fighters grow, they step up in competition. And, you know, like I've been, you know, moving down the ranks, unfortunately, like we touched on, and he's moving up in his career. And, you know, it makes sense. And there's a lot of people have been calling me out recently, over the last couple years, you know, okay, see me on a decline, and maybe I'm that easy fight that, the guy who had, you know, who had a lot of status and a lot of stature in the sport and in the rankings at one point, but now is fading from glory. And, you know, that if you look at things, and that's, you know, there's an argument to be made for that, but skills wise and where I'm at and my confidence in my abilities and what I expect to show in December, I know for a fact that I'm not out, you know, I'm down, but I'm not out.
Considering how competitive you are, like, that has to be annoying. Like, all these young bucks calling you out, like, how dare you guys call me out? Right. I'm the natural born killer. Is there ever a part of you that is like, these guys, they must have forgot who they're talking about?
Well, it makes sense though. You know, I would do the same thing in their shoes.
Right. I was just trying to pump you up a little bit.
Yeah, well, it doesn't take me much. You know, once we get out there, we'll see. Like that's been my whole thing. Like when I was young and I was a dark horse and quite often the underdog, it was, oh, this dude's going to smash you. This dude's going to smash you. This dude's going to smash you. You have no business fighting, you know, so-and-so. And then I'd go out there and I'd prove them wrong. And this is, you know, not a dissimilar situation. You know, I just got to get out there and perform.
Do you ever sit back and, you know, put on one of the old fights, one of the, you know, the wars from back in the day, title victories, just to pump yourself up? Are you that kind of guy, or do you not do that sort of thing?
No, every once in a while show my son or my sons.
Yeah.
If they want to watch, but man, I can't anymore. I don't watch too many fights other than like, hey, what did I do wrong? What can I improve? Also, what is my opponent looking? If my opponent's going back and doing homework on me, what is he seeing? So trying to do a little bit of counterintelligence in that sense.
How old is your oldest son now?
9 years old.
How does he react to seeing his dad in the glory days?
It's kind of hard to tell. He's a little bit ambivalent. He's definitely into it, but he doesn't lead on too much. he's a cool character.
Okay.
He keeps his hand pretty high.
Okay. And does he ask to go to your fights now?
He's watched the last one or two, I believe. He's never been to a live fight, though.
Do you want to bring it? Like, now we're starting to see a lot of fighters bring their kids to the fights and showcase them, if you will. Is this something that you'd like to experience?
No, not yet. You know, he's still young.
Okay. We've seen younger kids in that sit cage side and, you know, be there with their dad. Is there a reason why you don't want him there?
Yeah, everybody's different.
Yeah.
And it's a lot. I think it's a lot emotionally for a kid to handle. And like I said, you know, if somebody feels comfortable with doing that, cool. That's them. But, I think it's a big deal to, you know, and also you never know what's going to happen. You know, you could be injured dramatically and who knows what kind of emotional effect that's going to have on your kid.
Sure. But in summation, you still love this, right? Like you're still motivated and still enjoy fighting. You still enjoy the grind, the journey, all that stuff.
Hell
and
yeah.
More.
Absolutely, man. And I've been teaching a lot more lately, which gives me a different perspective. And that's kind of helped me deconstruct myself a little bit, building new fighters and building skills or helping people build their skills. I've been able to look at myself more objectively and deconstruct some of what I'm doing. There's some stuff that was hard to see from like one perspective. And I think I've definitely shored up some things that I've been lacking.
All right. And by the way, how's the coffee business going?
It's going good, man. we're scaling up right now. We're looking at 100 Hands 2.0, building a production facility and a brick and mortar retail spot. It's moving right along.
Well, good luck with that. One of these days, I'd love to try it. And I'm looking forward to your return on December 7th. Thank you for doing this, Carlos. I wish you the best in this training camp and, of course, looking forward to the fight.
Yeah, thanks, Ariel. Appreciate it. Good to talk to you, man.
Yes, absolutely. As always, there he is, the natural-born killer himself. It has been a while since we talked to him on the program. And he is back, like I said, on December 7th against Mickey Gall. Matter of moments, or are we going to go to him now? All right, we're going to be joined by Dominic Cruz in a matter of moments. Do we just have one today? Oh, okay. So let me first, before we get to Dominic, tell you about my good friends over at Ancestry DNA as you take a look at some of the best of Carlos Condit. Ever wonder where your family comes from? You can discover more about them and learn about your story by combining the Ancestry DNA test with billions of historical family records. I've told you about these good people before. It's a very easy process. It's a fascinating process. You spit in a tube, you put the tube in a box, you send the box off, and voila, they tell you about your whole family history. Ancestry DNA gives you so much more than just the places you're from. Ancestry connects you to the places in the world where your story started using precise geographic detail and clear-cut historical insights. You can even trace your ancestors' journeys over time following how and why your family moved from place to place. And to amplify your results, you can start a free trial on Ancestry and build a tree so your ancestors become much more than just a name. They've combined DNA results with over 100 million family trees and billions of records and give you more insight into your genealogy and origins. Only Ancestry can tell such a rich story with unique features that give a more complete picture about a person, like events that shaped them, how they made a living, and what they excelled in. You can even find out things like where they went to school, their background, all these things and more. I mean, it's just incredible stuff. It's so easy to get started. Here we go. Just go to Ancestry.com/MMA today for 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. That's Ancestry.com/MMA for 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. Again, that's Ancestry.com/MMA. So easy. Great people. Support them because they support us. I'm a big fan. I mean, it's that easy. Spit, box, you're off. All right. Now, let's go back to Abu Dhabi. Our guest will be on the call this Saturday for UFC 242 alongside John Anik and company. But I have a lot of important things to talk to them about, so let's not waste any time. Let's say hello now to the great Dominic Cruz, who is joining us right off the plane. And before we get to the – Dominic, how are you? Are you good?
Oh, I'm great. How you doing, Ariel?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Where's the birthday boy? Happy birthday, my dear Dominic. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
Thank you, Ariel. Yes, it is my birthday, but it's not my birthday all at the same time.
I forgot the lighter. My bad. I screwed that up. Yes, because you're saying it's already past midnight in Abu Dhabi. Is that what you're saying?
No, because my birthday is March 9th, Ariel.
What? What are you talking about? I thought it was September 3rd.
No, that's on Wikipedia because somebody was messing with the Wikipedia. However, it is my birthday because Henry Cejudo won't shut his mouth about me, so I'll take it.
Wait a second. Are you serious? Because someone wrote to me, be sure to wish Dominic Cruz a happy birthday today, and it's not your birthday after all that, Dom?
Do you believe everything you see on the internet, Ariel? Because if you do, we have a problem.
This is one of the most embarrassing moments of my life. Wow, I can't believe this.
That was exciting for me. I love that because, you know.
Oh, my gosh. I feel horrible. Well, all right. I take it all back. I take it all back. I'm sorry, Dominic. Okay. But first off, how was the – did we lose you
I'll
there?
Take it.
Are you still there? Dominic, you there? Can you hear me?
I lost you.
You lost me.
Got you. Say it again.
How was the flight, the long flight to Abu Dhabi?
Not bad. Going to Australia was much tougher.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm happy you're there. Thank you for doing this. Let's get right down to business. Henry Cejudo put out this video. He had the belts out. He had the dirty diapers. He had the bottles. And then he said he wants the easiest fight. He wants a tune-up fight. He wants the brittle Dominic Cruz. He wants the Arizona, you know, championship as well as the – here's the footage. You've seen it all. What did you make of this video from Henry Cejudo?
I mean – I was just surprised that he was able to piece together the sentences in that book. And I think that those are his own personal diaper. So that's the only place he could have gotten it. I don't really know what he's doing. I don't think anybody does. I think at this point, people are just laughing at what they don't know is going on. They're like, what is happening? But they're laughing because nobody knows what's happening.
Were you surprised by this call out? Did you think he would call you out? How did you react to the actual substance of what he was saying?
Well, I mean, he's acting like he beat a bunch of people that hadn't been beaten before. So that's what I didn't really understand. However, the shirt, you know, the shirt that he's wearing, it has my name on it. So that's cool. You know, tune up fight. Yeah, I'm going to tune him up. He got it right. He knows I'm going to tune him up. That's it. It's very simple.
Is this the fight that you think happens? Do you think this will be his next fight? Is the UFC, as far as you know, interested in booking you versus him?
I think the UFC is interested in booking us. And the reason is, I mean, you got to look at what's been done. I set the most records in this division of anybody in this division. I was the first ever to hold the title here. I had it for the longest of anybody in the division. And the people that I beat to get to the title, I didn't have an easy road. You know, there was nobody easy that I faced in order to get to that position. Not to mention, you know, I've had my own setbacks on top of that. So some say that, you know, that that tarnishes my career. The way I look at it is, it just made it that much harder for me to be successful in my career. And I'm still at the top of the division and I still have the skills. So, yeah, I think that that's the fight to make. You know, everybody knows that if you want to be the best in the division, you got to face me, or he already faced TJ. You got to face the champion. And, you know, I've been out for a little while, but I'm still here.
Okay. How is the shoulder feeling? And realistically, when could you return?
Well, that's the other thing. Henry Cejudo had a shoulder surgery as well.
Yeah.
And so I already know that by the time my shoulder's healed, it's going to take about the same amount of time for his shoulder to heal. So that lines us up probably right on the same dotted line. And I think that that's a fight to make. We have a lot of history, me and Henry. You know, we go back all the way down to the high school days. My senior year in high school, when I graduated, he was still competing in wrestling, but we were on the same Arizona National wrestling team. We competed, and there's just a long history of going to wrestling camps, being there when he's there in the Arizona wrestling circuit. He's always been the guy to beat in wrestling, and I never really got to compete with him there. So, you know, to get to actually fight him would be pretty awesome, because I mean, the things that he's done in the sport, you have to tip your hat to in the sport of wrestling. But in the sport of fighting, he's still very green, very new, and extremely soft. I mean, this man has been catered to his entire life, because coaches his whole life has seen him as a super athlete. And so they always pull him out of the masses and take care of him and coddle him and baby him. And, you know, he came straight out of high school to the Olympic Training Center to compete in wrestling. So I believe that the reason why people have such a hard time understanding Henry Cejudo is Henry Cejudo doesn't know who he is. Straight out of high school, they locked him away in a room and they threw him on the wrestling mats to win a gold medal. Henry Cejudo is the gold medal. That's all he knows. So that's why you only hear from him is what he's earned. If you take away the gold medal, you take away the UFC belts, what would you hear Henry Cejudo say that he is? Who does he make a difference for? And why? What's his purpose here? And I think that that's what makes him such a confusing entity to the world, is he doesn't know who the heck he is without winning in competition. So to go out there and beat that man and just beat him down and explain to the world how confused he is with what real life is. You know, this man really truly believes that the whole world revolves around winning belts and medals. Well, when that's all said and done, what are you going to be? That's the question I have for him. And after I beat him down, he's going to be in that question for a good period of time.
Wow. That was deep, man. Holy smokes. That was super deep. So wait a second. The Henry that we see today, like the cringe and all that stuff, do you feel like that is almost like just a bit of an exaggeration of the man that you saw, or the kid that you saw back in the day? Is this not that much of a stretch from that guy from back then?
Well, we don't know who he is because he won't let that out. That's why he's so cringy. The cringe is to hide who he doesn't know how to be, which is himself.
Ooh, geez Louise. This is incredible. Has this been a fight?
It's a very easy way for him to hide, because you can make everything a joke and everything's not real and everything's, you know, oh, I'm the best. Oh, bend the knees so you can look me in the eyes. Like, nobody wants to bend the knees so they can make eye contact with you, Henry. You know, the thing is, you got to understand that whole persona, that whole WWE thing is much easier for him than being an authentic human being. It's much easier than him being Henry Cejudo. And the reason is, he doesn't even know who he is. It's a fact. He just has no clue. He's been locked in the wrestling room his whole life. He has no people skills. And he's a very confused kid.
And so, could I ask this? Because I feel like this is the question that's going to come. Olympic gold medalist, two-weight champion, you know, beats Dillashaw, beats Marlon Moraes. Is Dominic Cruz jealous of Henry Cejudo's success?
Never. I mean, the thing that the people that he's beaten, not only have I beaten TJ Dillashaw, Joseph Benavidez, and Demetrius Johnson, the only person he's beaten that I haven't is Moraes. And Moraes gasses out. We saw that. I don't gas out. So that's a simple fix. Besides that, there's nothing to be jealous of, because he doesn't even know who he is. I know exactly who I am with the belt, without the belt. I've been retired. I've felt that before. I've felt what it's like to live life without being, you know, at the top. This man is lost unless he's got something to show for what he is. And so I'm excited to take that away from him and see and have him learn and have him be able to find that out for himself.
And in all honesty, isn't this sort of like a gift? Like, it's not often that the champion is calling someone out. Usually, in your case, you need to try to call out the champion to get that fight. He's doing your job for you, right? Like, he's actually making this a lot easier in a weird way, correct?
I mean, you could say that. I just think that that's the one thing he's smart at is competition. So, while he might not have all the people skills in the world, the man knows how to compete. And he knows how to fight, and he knows how to wrestle. And that's what we're actually talking about here. So in the octagon, all the skills and everything that he needs is there. But I also have those things in flying colors. And I've done this – I've been in this sport longer than him, and I've done more in it with harder opponents than he has. Bigger, larger, stronger, more often. So he's still learning. I mean, I'll never forget the one time – Henry Cejudo, we get into a van together and we're driving to, I still had the belt at this time and I had just beaten Demetrius and I had just beaten Faber. And we get into a van, we're going to go do like a photo shoot. And he's like, hey, and we get in the van, he's like, oh, hey, Dom, how you doing? He's like, hey, we should train together and we should go. I would like to train with you. I'd like you to help me get ready for Demetrius. And I looked at him and I said, you don't want me to really help you get ready for Demetrius. I said, the truth is you want to compete with me and see that if you're good enough to beat me or compete with me, then you know that you're good enough to compete with Demetrius Johnson. So the real reason you even want to even talk to me right now about training or me teaching you something is because you just want to be able to use me as a gauge because you're not confident in yourself. I can't give you that confidence, and realistically, even if I would be a good coach for you, you wouldn't hear anything I have to say because you're an Olympic world champion. I mean, you're an Olympian. You're a gold medalist. Who's going to tell you what to do? All these cronies that you have around you are all yes men. He doesn't have one person around him that tells him the truth. He's been surrounded by yes men his entire life. So it was really nice for me to be able to sit there and explain to him that, look, I'm not going to train with you. I'm not going to help you get ready for that fight. You don't even want me there. You just want to use me as a gauge to get yourself moving forward. And he kind of said, wow, you're really honest. And I said, yeah, but there's no point in wasting the time. So this thought of me and Henry facing each other has been going on for a long time. Henry knows it. Henry knows I'm the guy to beat. If you don't beat me, you can't be the champion of the division. I'm the longest standing champion at 135 pounds. And the people that I beat speaks for itself. Now, you want to say, yes, he's been hurt. Yes, this, yes, that. I mean, everybody gets hurt in this sport. If anything, like he said, that should make it an easier fight for him, shouldn't it? But that's what TJ Dillashaw thought too.
Back in the day when you guys were youngsters, did you actually ever like roll with him? Did you actually go toe to toe with him?
What's funny is exactly what I'm saying. I remember we were at a Payson wrestling camp. I was a sophomore in high school. And he's about 3 or 4 years younger than me. And they always would separate Henry from everybody else. And all the coaches would gather around him and teach him his own stuff. And it was just, so he never really was with us because they wanted to make sure he didn't get hurt. He was another level of wrestling at that point. He developed quickly. He's extremely good at wrestling. So because of that, he just was never really part of the actual group. He was always coddled. So this is a time where we're meeting and we're going to see how well that actually worked for him. You know, in the sporting world, it worked really well. But what I love about fighting is how real it is. You can't lie. You can't dodge anything. Everything that you say comes and faces you. Everything that you are comes and faces you. And, I think that all that coddling is gonna hurt him in the end when he faces somebody like me, because I went the rough road. I had it where I wasn't the one that, you know, maybe not the most talented, maybe not the guy that everybody saw like, oh, that's going to be the guy. So I had to work. And that paid off in the WEC days too. I had to work all the way to the top. You know, guys like Faber got 35 title shots in a row. And, things like that happen because of marketing, because of promotion, and because of, you know, knowing how to use the right politics. Henry's making the right move right now, and he's playing the right game, I think, because he knows if you're really going to have any validity in this division, you've got to beat me. And that's it.
Dare I ask, what do you think of all the intergender stuff?
Well, what do you mean? You got to be more specific.
You know, he's calling out Valentina Shevchenko and all this. I mean, it seems like it's all for laughs, but do you feel like there's something more to that? I mean, you have a very deep way of looking at things, so I'm just curious to get your take on that.
Well, I mean, you're seeing that, you know, you're seeing some man drop down like a Fallon Fox is somebody that you could think of, right? Dropping down to the women's division and doing pretty well in that division. You know, men are men, women are women, in their bodies. That just depends on how you are. But I don't really know what to say. I don't really have an opinion on it just because I would never do it. I don't have any will to fight a female.
Yeah.
So I didn't really understand where that came from, except for the fact that, again, he sees an opportunity, you know, to, I guess, take advantage of something that he thinks is easy. I mean, that's how I guess he would see me too, right? As somebody who's been injured a lot and maybe fragile. So maybe he sees it as the easy way out. I don't know. I can't really explain what Henry Cejudo's thinking of doing that. Some people want to say it was a joke, but I mean, we're seeing it actually happen in the world today. So where men are coming to the women's divisions, and so I haven't seen any women come to the men's division yet, but we've seen them cross up with the transgender stuff going on. So whether it's a joke or not, is it really funny? Because it's actually happening.
Mm. And so when you talk about like him being coddled and, you know, him being soft, that's all fair criticism. But are you able to say like you've been impressed? Like, has he turned into a better MMA fighter than you expected? Has he exceeded your expectations? Are you impressed with what he's doing?
I want you to know that I'm not talking about him being soft in fighting.
Uh-huh.
This is where he is. This is where he basks. But, you know, it's easy to hide under the limelight of being a world champion and being the best fighter in the world and being the best wrestler in the world. But when you really break down what that is what are you? You're a professional prize fighter that beats people up for a living. You're a professional wrestler that puts people on their back for a living. What does that actually equate to as a human being? What are you actually really doing? So while he's a great fighter, and that's what we're talking about, as a human, he's soft. And I plan to break the human being before he gets in there to fight who I am.
Amazing. And so you I asked you about the shoulder, but you didn't specifically tell me, like, realistically, what month could you return or when would you want to return?
Well, you know, according to Henry, he says his shoulder should be ready, you know, beginning of next year. And he goes, well, I got a picture of me with him and Masvidal. And what happened is I was walking through the hallways and Masvidal is hanging out with Henry. Excuse me. And he goes, Hey, I got to get a picture with you guys. And so I'm like kind of thrown off and I'm like, okay. And so we walk up and I take a picture and that gets posted. But it really just, you know, he told me in that moment, I was like, oh, how you feeling, man? I heard you had shoulder surgery. I saw it blow out when he did it. And he said, yeah, you know, I probably want to have a Christmas and be with my family and my kids. I said, well, I don't really give a shit about Christmas. So how about we fight on Christmas? And he said, no, I want to be with my family and just and have that time. And I was like, well, okay, well, if you change your mind and you want to talk about the things that matter, like fighting me, let's do it. Let's do it very beginning of next year. I think both of our shoulders will be lined up. And, you know, he's one of the greatest wrestlers to ever compete in the sport. I'm not an Olympic gold medalist. It's a big deal to do that. And I have nothing but respect for the things he's done in the sporting world. But I look forward to talking to this man for 8 weeks leading up to the fight, if I can get him to sign the dotted line. But realistically, I think he knows what that entails. And as much as he wants to say I'm fragile, in the body, my mind is as strong as they come, and you got to deal with that for 8 weeks before you get to deal with this body. And this body that you're going to deal with is actually a lot stronger and a lot more capable than people ever really realize until you get in there with me.
And what would you say to someone who says Dominic Cruz hasn't fought in 3 years? It's been over 3 years since his last victory. He does not deserve a title shot.
Who says who deserves what, first of all? Who makes that rule? And second of all, Nate Diaz just was out for 3 years. I've been out for 3 years, came back and won a world title after 3 years. Diaz came back and beat somebody after 3 years too. 3 years, what is that? That's a good rest. We're talking about a guy like, here's an example. I was out for 3 years with injuries. USADA gave TJ Dillashaw a 2-year ban for taking an illegal substance. What the heck is a 2-year ban? Like, that's not even a punishment. You give me 2 years to just rest my body and relax and spend all the money that I made as a prize fighter while I was cheating. Like, that's an easy way, to come back. Now, what I've gone through, you're dealing with rebuilding the body and chopping it down several times. I mean, I broke my ulna, then everything shrinks down because you can't train. My whole arm was just like a big bone. I had to rebuild all the atrophy. Then I blow out my shoulder. That sinks down to nothing. I had to rebuild all the muscle back in this, which I'm still doing, which should be back before the end, by the end of, beginning of next year. So when I really look at who's done what after long layoffs, I wrote the book on it, and Diaz, went out there and showed that the things that I said are real, along with me always coming up and showing up with following through with what I say is real. And I plan to do that again. A 3-year layoff is just, what is that? Who cares? Brock Lesnar's been out for how long? We're about to match him up with Daniel Cormier for a world title. Are we really talking about what's fair? Are we really talking about what's possible? Or are we just talking about people's opinions of sheep, mostly?
Fair enough. And so I know Henry is there in Abu Dhabi. Are you hoping to run in to him over there? Are you going to try to find him? What's the plan of attack here?
Well, how do you find somebody like that, you know? He just, you gotta really just, you know, you just gotta really focus. He's a little dude. So to see him out here amongst all these giants in the UFC is going to be a tall order.
And by the way, before I let you go, I'd be remiss if I don't ask you about your old friend Uriah Faber coming back and looking so good in his return. What did you feel when you saw him do that?
I love that. I did. I really actually loved that because, you know, what he said was so typical him, though. I remember he's like, well, you know, he's just not on that level yet. Like, what does that mean, Faber? What are you talking about? What level are you talking about? Like, we're all pros here. So it's just so funny to hear him say the stupid stuff after he wins. That was funny. But to see him go out and knock him out like that, the way he did Simone, with the hot streak that that guy was on, that was beautiful, especially coming from the days. I mean, me and that dude were come all the way from the WEC days. This is 10, 15 years in the making me and this guy have faced. And I fought him, 3 times, and that chapter's over. He's got a lot of people in the division that I think he can give a lot of fits to. So hopefully they give him the matchups that, you know, can stand for the veterans, but I don't know. The division's looking pretty hot. I don't know who Shelby's going to match him up against, but he's got some tough fights ahead of him after beating Simone.
He's gunning for Cejudo as well. He's one of many.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's gunning for the champion. That doesn't surprise me, but I mean, Faber getting a title shot, what sense does that make? I mean, I beat the brakes off of him, and a lot of other people will beat the brakes off of him too, so the thing is, he is good, and I am proud of him for going out there and creating that win at 40 years of age and landing his overhand right. What a surprise. Like, I mean, gosh, how many times are people going to let him land that and then go for a guillotine before you realize he's got an overhand right and a guillotine? That's all you have to watch for. That is it. And these guys just keep walking into it. It's mind-blowing to me.
So as you said, a lot of people gunning for the champ, but in conclusion, you feel confident that when Henry Cejudo returns, his next fight will be against you, yes?
If he's smart, I'm the guy to fight. Who else? Tell me who else brings anything to the table in the sense of viewers. Ariel, like, all right, we've got Jan, okay, new on the scene, could probably still keep building that guy. He's definitely got a future. These are all guys that have a huge future. Austin Sal just got beaten by homeboy. I don't know. He's got like 100 followers or something. What's his name?
Corey Sandhagen.
Thank you, Sandhagen. Then you've got
Sterling.
Sterling. Who else? Come on, help me out.
Sterling.
I got a lot of things in my brain.
Yes, Sterling Faber is out there. Piotr Jan, as you said, yourself. TJ is out for quite some time.
TJ's gone.
And there's Joseph Benavidez, who, of course, at 125, the UFC has said they want Henry to fight there,
okay,
too.
Okay, so if Henry goes to if Henry goes to 125, that makes sense, right? Because Benavidez is one of the greatest in that division. I think he definitely has a chance to beat Henry at 125. I truly believe that. However, I beat Benavidez twice, so wouldn't people want to see me fight Henry, you know, at 135? I believe that would have more of a say. Not bashing on Benavidez because he is that good, but I think people would be more interested in seeing Henry move up and face me, especially after the layoff. I mean, people know after I come off a layoff, I'm not a normal guy. I show up different. So isn't the curiosity there? My face is there. You don't know half these other guys. Doesn't mean that they're not good. It doesn't mean that they can't fight. It doesn't mean they're not actually some of the best on planet Earth. I truly believe the 135-pound division is the best it's ever been, period. All these guys are savages, but nobody knows who they are. They need to fight. They need to win. And, you know, when you hear guys like Nate talk, this is what he's talking about. He's saying, all you guys who come in, you fight two fights and you get a world title. You haven't been in the game. I get what he means. I remember I won my first title at 25 years old in 2010. And I had the belt until I was 30 or something like that. So it's hard to say how long it took me to build any kind of fan base, any kind of story. Your story has to build in this, and then people want to follow it. And these gentlemen all have stories to build, and I think they have fights to make. But right now, my story with Henry is there. We have a history. He believes he can beat me. I'm 100% positive that everything about my style brings nothing but problems to him. I move my feet. I don't sit still. I don't get tired. I'm longer than him. I match his speed. I guarantee you he's no stronger than me because he's a weight class under me. All the things line up, plus the layoff. So let's say you hate me. Let's say I don't deserve it. Then let's put that man on me and see. And then you can also watch me get beat up if that's what you want to see, okay? But I doubt that happens. The point is the fight's there. I'm easily one of the most well-known guys in this division, and that's what people want to see. It's not just the fight. When you watch guys like Conor McGregor, he built the idea that people don't want to just see a good fight. Half the time, they don't even know what a good fight is. They want to see a guy like Tom Cruise or a guy like Matthew McConaughey show up to the cage, or Justin Bieber or something, show up to the cage and fight Dana White. Why? Because they're two famous people fighting. They don't care how good the fight is. They care what's on the line with the fame, and they care that somebody gets humiliated when they're famous. I've got a lot on the line. I've had a lot to say, and I have a feeling a lot of fighters on the roster have a lot, would love to watch me get punched in the face a little bit too. And, you know, maybe even some of the fans. So I know Henry wants to do it, so I'll get him a step stool and we can make this happen.
I am sold, my friend. Great job as always, Dom. Thank you very much for doing this, especially after the long flight. I apologize, but I'll still give you this cupcake the next time I see you. I'm going to save it for you right over here. I appreciate it, and good luck on the call this Saturday as well, Dom.
March 9th.
All right.
March
9th. Thank you.
If all works out, let's get me that birthday fight. That's why I thought that's why you were saying happy birthday.
Oh, okay. Good save.
I thought it was official, like you were giving me the fight. You know, it's on.
My bad.
Tell Henry. Henry, nothing March. But hugs, man. Come on. Let's make this happen. I probably need to be a little bit more gentle with him so that he'll take the fight. But
all right, we'll see what happens.
I will be. I'll do what I got to do.
Dom, thank you. You're a mensch. I appreciate it. Enjoy Abu Dhabi. Dominic Cruz, the man. Thank you so much to him. I am sold on that fight. Great job. I knew he would break down Henry Cejudo very well. And there you go. He broke him down. All right. So excited about our next guest. Like I said, he doesn't do a lot of interviews these days. It's hard to track him down, but he is here. He is the number one contender in the 155-pound division. He is the uncrowned champ. He is the king without a crown. He is the man that Khabib Nurmagomedov and Dustin Poirier agree should fight for the title next. He is the one and only El Cucuy, Tony Ferguson. He joins us on the phone right now. Tony, are you there?
What's up, my man? How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. So good to hear from you. Like I said, hard to track you down, so I really appreciate you doing the show today. Thank you so much for this. So let me start here. We last saw you in action June in Chicago. Since then, a few, you know, social media posts here and there, but you haven't done many interviews. You haven't talked a lot. Why have you been sort of out of the limelight for the last 3 months?
I've been working my ass off, dude. First of all, I want to say I miss my fans. I miss doing interviews. Appreciate you having me on. I've been really busy with my academy and then just really just building things, man, just from the ground up, especially my family. So just really taking the time to redo things the right way, so which is actually really good, man.
How are you feeling right now, mentally, spiritually, physically? How is Tony Ferguson right now?
Fucking strong, dude. I feel really good. I really get pumped when my fans, they back me up. I mean, it's easy to post like some goofy videos, but at the end of the day, what I'm really doing is I'm putting in the time and the effort into my martial arts and really trying to paint that canvas for a lot of people out there. Somehow they think it's inspirational. I really don't think about it too much. I just really try to just do what I do, and that's have fun, be original. So I'm excited to be in the spotlight, especially with Khabib and Poirier fighting this week. There's a lot going on, man. I'm really happy to be right in the middle of it.
You've become somewhat of a cult-like figure in our sport. Like, your fans love you, and, you know, the videos, all this stuff, like the social media, you do it very well. Are you aware of this? Like, and I think maybe the time away has built that up. It has made you into sort of this mythical creature in our sport. Are you aware of this, the relationship that you have? It's very unique with the fans right now.
Yeah. I remember I was actually checking some of my throwbacks, and I remember when I first posted about like 40,000 or 90K. I told my wife and I told a couple of my teammates, I was like, you know what, I'm going to try my best to get to a million in a year organically. I'm not going to, you know, try to sell people on a bunch of stuff. And I'm just going to try to do it naturally. And when I got injured, it was a nice little goal of mine. And I took it with a grain of salt, man. I really had fun with it. The fans seemed to enjoy it. And we built, I wouldn't call it a cult, but you know what I mean? When somebody told me I'm their spirit animal, it's funny, but I just crack up a lot of these people, and I became the type of guy to do some shit like that, so I enjoy it, dude.
When you say that, the type of guy, like, that's become a famous line. You know, Tony Ferguson is the kind of guy. Have you seen that line? Do you get a laugh out of that every time you see people tweeting that?
Oh, I crack it up, man. I really do. When some people get original with it, somebody said I would be the type of guy to go to a feminist rally and have come back with my shirt ironed and a sandwich. I was cracking up. As bad as that sounds, these things get creative, and if they're funny and they're positive, you know what I mean, we'll keep them around, we'll like them, and it's good. It's good banter, man. It's hype, and I'm glad the fans dig it. I'm digging it. Let's just keep it going, man. I'm the new Chuck Norris.
By the way, where did that start, the Tony Ferguson is the kind of guy? Do you know?
I have no idea. What? I really don't know. It just popped up sometime. Somebody thought I did it, but I didn't do it, man. It's really original, and it's actually pretty cool, man. So I'm enjoying it, dude. It's kind of like champ shit only, man. It's one of those things, defend or vacate. It's a theme that I have that I enjoy when I do it with my fans, and they fucking love it, dude. And I'm here to stay, so champ shit only.
And so, of course, as you mentioned, Khabib is fighting this weekend against Dustin. The title is on the line. I had seen some chatter that you were going to Abu Dhabi, that you were going to be the backup fighter weighing in, getting paid sort of like Alex Volkanovski in Edmonton a month or so ago. Is that the case? Are you going to Abu Dhabi to be the backup fighter?
I would love to go. I mean, it was talked about for me. I mean, first of all, I'm not backup for anybody. I got 12 fights in a row, dude. Fuck that. You know what I mean? It was talked about something, but you know what I mean? I was kind of interested in it. But at the end of the day, I'm not here to be backup. Like I said, I have a belt. I won 12 in a row. The next fight that I have is for the belt. It's going to have a lot of buildup, especially for the fans. It's got to have the hype, man. It deserves a full camp and lead-up time. You know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm.
So was this on the table? Like, you could have done this if you wanted to?
I mean, literally, they put it kind of out there, but they didn't make it sound so interesting. I mean, it didn't really sound like they were really wanting me to be out there. It was kind of like, hey, we're going to try to do you a favor. But at the end of the day, I've done this already. I fought for my title. I deserve more than that. I got 12 fights in a row. I mean, I forget what my record really is. It's like 26 or 27 and 3. I don't have to do that. I don't do interviews anymore because I'm out there fucking working my ass off in some other stuff. I'm putting my experience points in places where I really want to do it. I don't do too much media because I don't have to anymore. I told everybody to enjoy me while I was there. They did. The people that were nice, I did awesome interviews for, and I'm going to keep doing interviews for. And I just want to just put the hype out there the right way. And I signed with my new management. They're helping me out, and I'm very fortunate to be able to have a really good small circle of people around me, man, that take care of me.
Mm-hmm. And you seem to be in a good place, and that's great. And I wonder, when you hear Khabib and Dustin come out and say, like, no, the next guy has to be Tony, with everything that you've dealt with, all the ups and downs, the emotional roller coaster, like, does that make you feel better? Do you feel confident that you are, in fact, the next man in line, or will you only kind of believe it when you see it?
Hey, money talks, bullshit walks. I mean, that straight up. I mean, we're going to have to see how this end of this weekend goes. But, I mean, if you had to ask me who's going to win, you obviously know my answer, Ariel, right? Double knockout. So, I keep saying at the end of the day, but really, I mean, we're midday right now. I'm enjoying it. I'm cruising down the Pacific Coast right now, watching the ocean and chilling. But I'm thinking about the fight and how it's going to go. I just hope that Dustin put in the work. And I guarantee you that I know both these fighters are nervous. It's in a dope-ass arena. I mean, I would have loved to fight for that title there. Soon, man. Soon. So this weekend, hopefully it's going to be fireworks. And hopefully they did enough work. So let them nerves out.
Did you consider going to Abu Dhabi? Not to be the backup, but just to be there and watch it, to sort of have your presence felt there. Did you consider that?
Yeah, for sure. We're still kind of just in the networks right now. I'm just playing the field right now. Like I said, I just got back from Big Bear. I spent some time with my family. I acclimated up there last night. I ran 4 miles at jog pace, which was around like 7 minutes a piece. I mean, I'm in shape, dude. I'm ready to go. My weight's good. I feel great. I'm clean shaven. I got a new haircut. I feel good, dude. I really do. I'm very fortunate to be able to flip some shit, man, and make some stuff work for me. So life's good, man.
And by the way, after the Cerrone fight, were you ever in talks to fight Khabib next? Like, you know, we've seen interim champions, you know very well, you know, get passed over. I know Dustin had that belt, but were there ever any talks of calling the audible and having you fight Khabib in Abu Dhabi?
No, I think before anything, they, you know, kind of guaranteed me a title shot. But like I said, I mean, that's between my management and them. I mean, that's why I hired them. I mean, my relationship with the UFC has always been really good. I'm a company man. I have several outstanding issues with them that, you know, obviously we'll address when the time is right. But right now, all we've talked about is me fighting the winner of this next fight. I mean, that's ultimate reality.
Is it possible to maybe expand a little bit? You said you have some issues with them. What do you mean by that? Can you talk about any of those?
It's defender vacay. We just, like, I mean, literally it's champ shit only. I mean, I can go on all day with these themes, but I mean, I have to fight the next for the title shot. That's what I have to do. In my head, that's what I'm going to do. The next title shot, I'm going to fight. The winner of this next fight is going to come up and we're going to put these belts together and we're going to fight for the real belt. I have a belt. I already fought for it. They arbitrarily took that stuff from me, man. I mean, I don't have to refurbish everything on the past years, but I mean, I haven't done my interviews, but I haven't been treated the best. But like I said, I'm still a company man. I'm still here and I'm fighting for it. And I fight for something different.
What do you fight for now?
Same thing, but I just got a lot more to fight for. I got a lot of people around this world that look for me for inspiration. But you know what I mean? I'm from USA. You know, I'm Mexican-American. I really try hard. You know, you got a lot of people out here that are just hardworking, doing the thing. I wear a white collar and a blue collar. Both dirties, I'm always fucking working. You see me hit the speed bag in my suit. You know how it rolls.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm a businessman, but at the end of the day, I work my ass off. So, you know how it goes.
Has the UFC told you or your management that you are, in fact, next for the winner of Saturday's title fight?
Have they told me? I'm pretty sure they have, man. I mean, that's what management's, they're letting them, everybody know, and that's what they're telling me. That's what UFC let me know before this fight and during and after. And obviously, they want me to be backup and... You want me there, treat me better, man. I mean, literally, they're not treating me bad, but you know what I mean? I'm one of you guys. I'm one of Dana White's favorite fighters from The Ultimate Fighter. You know, Brock Lesnar was one of my coaches, and not to name drop, but these people that I don't really talk to too many people. Superheroes don't hang out with other superheroes. You get it?
Yeah, I feel you.
You know, once in a while, we'll go out there and we'll spar and we'll do our same shit, but at the end of the day, you know, when I get to go see UFC, it's something special during fight week. So right now I'm a little jelly that they get to go out there in Abu Dhabi and get that fight treatment. You know what I mean? That's like my favorite part during fight week. So especially the open workouts. So I'm missing that one.
Did you hear, by the way, Zhang Wei Li, the new champion at 115, said that you are her favorite fighter. She loves your style, your approach to fighting. Did you see this? And if so, how did you react to that?
I thought it was pretty dope. I mean, ESPN was awesome. They put a cool video to her. I mean, it was really shocking. I opened up my Twitter, then boom, there it was, which was pretty cool, man. And she had a good turnout out there. So, you know, props to Jessica Andrade for showing up. But dang, man, Wale, man, she showed up, dude. She put some elbows and knees on that girl, man. She fast.
Amazing.
So congratulations to her for sure.
And of course, you know, the big cloud hanging over this is Conor McGregor. And I spoke to Conor recently and I asked him about fighting Khabib and I asked him about you. And I'm wondering if there's any part of you that is worried that after this fight, they'll see the Khabib Conor rematch and they'll go in that direction. And once again, you'll be left off on the sidelines.
No way, man. The fans, they wouldn't have it, dude. They'd put up too much of a fight. I mean, it seems like he had several fights with fans and old men. I mean, recently, I mean, he was trying to fight Mark Wahlberg. You know, maybe that's the fight for him. Dude's got a couple things. I mean, he's making his money. He's doing his thing. I don't know if he wants to fight anymore. He's not my concern. He's like a female, dude, not like one of those ex-girlfriends, dude. Like, I'm trying to tell you, I stopped worrying about that, dude. Like, it was just like, at first he was in line, tried to go for the title. And then once he became irrelevant, I stopped caring about the dude. And now he's mentioning my name. Get the fuck out of here, dude. Come on.
Because of the history there with the management team and all that, and because of you never getting the title shot, is that fight personal for you? Like, is that, you know, I know you want that belt, but at some point, does that fight need to happen for you?
If it push comes to shove and then we need to, I mean, I see him fighting the loser. I mean, of this next fight this weekend, I mean, reality. I mean, if we want to keep up with the rankings, then we got to do it the right way. I mean, it's on ESPN, right? I mean, mm-hmm. We are professional. I mean, this is what we do. It is the UFC. That's why we have rankings. So me, if I fight for the title next, he's got to fight for the underdog. He wins. And then, you know what I mean? Maybe I'll give him a shot.
I know you mentioned the double knockout, but there has to be a part of you that wants Khabib to win, if only because this is the fight that we've been talking about for so long, right? Like, this is the fight that has to happen. I would imagine there's a part of you that's almost rooting for him so that we can finally see that fight once and for all.
That's what I'm saying. You guys think I want that fight. I don't give a fuck who's in front of me. Pardon my language. You know that. Mm-hmm. When I told Dana asked me who I want to fight next. I said, reality. I said, check this out. I was like, this is a tournament. I was like, in a tournament bracket, when I found out this wasn't a regular tournament bracket, I found out this was round robin. That means you have to fight everybody. So that's my case. Everybody else in a tournament bracket, but I'm round robin. I'm fighting these guys. I'm retiring them or I'm making them move weight classes. They're unsure about their shit. So, I mean, this is my weight class. I own it. Doesn't matter who's going to be next. I'll politely go out there, shake their hand. I'm not going to bow to them. But I'm going to go out there. I'm going to put work on them. I'm going to give them a Tony Ferguson finish. That's a technical fault. The champ shit only, baby. You know what it is, Ariel.
Yes, sir. And, you know, before that fight against Donald in June, you did say a lot about the UFC and about Dana White, and you did seem to be a little bit perturbed with the relationship. Do you feel like it's better now? Like, did you happen to clear the air with him after that fight in Chicago? You were there face to face. Do you feel like it's in a better spot?
Yes, I really do. I'm a businessman, but I think he's proud of me. I'm proud of him from like everything and in business point, how far we've grown. Relationship's getting good, man. I mean, it really is. I've had to earn my right here and I'm not bitching too much about it. I mean, at the time during the fight, why I don't have the belt around my waist when I'm carrying it. Come on. That's only one of the biggest reasons why I'm upset. But I'm still here. I'm fighting. I got, you know, a roof over my head. My kid's eating. I'm chilling. My fans are happy. My wife is cool. My family's great. My dogs and my litter, they're cool. I mean, you saw me with putting the pets up there. I mean, it's growth, man. My plants are growing. You've heard that term from other fighters, but where do you think it comes from? So, you know what I mean? If they're taking a page out of my book, I must be doing something right. Mm-hmm.
Khabib has said that he wants to get in one more fight this year, possibly fight end of the year card December 14th. Would you like that? Would you like to have a fight before the end of the year?
Hey, old boy's got to win first. I mean, Mr. Dirty Wig, Mr. Snow Cone, Mr. whatever you want to call him. I'm telling you, I'm still going to mop that mat with that wig. Trust me. I don't care how clean that shit is. So, I mean, I'm not going to say it's going to be soaked in red, but it ain't going to be clean no more. So hopefully Dustin gets a piece of him and throws him on his back and puts him away, so then we can have a little American fucking battle royale. But if, like I said, you know what I mean? If a push comes to shove and we need to do it, me and Khabib will go out there and we'll handle this shit in December. So either Dustin or Khabib, title shot next December, Las Vegas. Let's make it happen, UFC brass.
Wow. So am I correct in deciphering that you're actually kind of leaning towards Dustin, that you're kind of pulling for Dustin?
Hey, man, he's American. He's cool. He's out of Top Team. I mean, it was one of the gyms I wanted to go and train out of. I haven't had the opportunity. I fought a couple people out of there. Solid team, man. I mean, they got a good bunch of people there, champions. But what I'm doing here on the West Coast, at my academy, you asked me why I've been so busy. Mm-hmm. I'm building the thing myself. I got maybe like one or two different partners that are in it. But it's something I'm very proud of. It's taken me 4 years. I've asked management a long time ago to help me out. They really didn't do shit. So I had to build it when nobody told me no. So, I mean, if you build it, they will come. And we're clearing the mechanism.
Are you still doing the unconventional stuff, the stuff that makes people a little bit worried? I mean, you do stuff that I must say I can never even dream of being a fighter, let alone some of the stuff that you pull off in training. It's unconventional, to say the least. Are you still doing this stuff, or have you come down from that a little bit?
No way. Check this out. I've been lifting and doing exercises and fitness for 20 plus years. I joked around. I had my double doctorate. I mean, in reality, in exercise and kinesiology, I've been injured. I've healed. I've done a lot, man. I've been around and seen how to heal injuries, which is the one thing in recovery. That means you get to able to push yourself. Now, when you're able to push yourself for a duration like that, you get more creative with how you lift and how you punch the bag and how you move, because your body gets so used to accustomed. And for myself, I don't try to plateau. I always try to trick my body, trick my mind, and make sure that it's always guessing. I use the term, I always throw salt in everything. So nothing is perfect. When they say perfect practice makes perfect, you can always try that, but nothing's perfect. You're going to have to always keep working at it. And once you settle, I'll use a couple people that, you know, when they skyrocket very high, their drop is going to go very low too. When you stay at a consistent high, your drop won't be so low. You're going to actually keep it going. It's kind of like people that use PEDs versus not. If you use steroids, it's going to be inflamed later on in life. You know what I mean? It's not going to really be too good for you if you don't. It's not good for you.
What about the baseball career?
That's the way to go.
Are we still pursuing that?
I got a baseball right in front of me. I really do. I have a baseball right in front of me. One of my guys is, he's putting me in touch with him, man. I haven't forgot about it. And it's funny how you say that. I actually have a baseball in my hand right now.
Wow. So is this like you really want to try to pursue this? You want to try and land with a squad?
Hey, man, I played three sports in high school and in college. I really went to wrestling, but I really want to play baseball and football. And I just had to choose one, man, and put all my golden tickets and my tokens into that shit, because that's what you do. Right now, I remember Bo Jackson was one of my favorite athletes, a multi-sport athlete. You've had Michael Jordan, who's a multi-sport athlete. I mean, some of the world's greatest. Yeah, I think it was Greg Maddux, who actually played hockey. I think he was a pitcher too. And then, you know, the dude would make some stops at pitcher mound. So I'm really good at what I do, and I'm really persistent in my goals. And that's one of them, dude. And, management's right there with me, and we'll see what happens.
What position would you play?
I'm a utility man.
Okay.
Utility guy. I can play anywhere.
I like it. Sort of like your MMA career. Like, you could do a little bit of everything, right?
Hey, when you win, you put your experience points in certain places. And after fights and after films and baseball and, well, not baseball, football, we would actually go back and watch film. My pops taught me that, to always watch your film and watch your losses more than you do your wins. When you do that, you learn a lot more. So this goes out to all the fighters out there. How do you make yourself better? Watch your losses. Make sure you learn from that stuff.
And so will you watch the fight on Saturday, Tony?
Yeah, I think they're figuring some stuff out. I don't know if there's going to be a couple of viewing parties or what's going on where or who, not. But just stay tuned, man. You guys know already. Follow me on my way to victory at Tony Ferguson XT on that IG and that Twitter thingy.
And so while you're watching it and then in the aftermath, and then something big happens, that, you know, the guy wins, whoever wins, Dustin, Khabib, something big, and they come to you with another Cerrone-like fight, maybe even Connor, something, they need you in a pinch. Any of this, are you gonna entertain any of this, or does the next fight have to be for the belt? No ifs, ands, or buts, we have to have you fighting for the belt, you're not gonna stand for anything less. Is that 100% accurate?
Ariel, show me the money, brother. That's all I'm saying, dude. Title shot, 12 fights in a row. Hey, treat me right, baby. Come on now. Daddy earns it. Let's go. Poppy needs to eat.
All right. I think we have said enough. Anything else you want to get off your chest, Tony, before we let you go? Because like I said, this is not a common occurrence for us to talk to you on the show.
No, it's not. You know what? I said I miss you guys. Love you all. Thank you very much, fans, for having my back. Thick and thin. I love y'all. And Blades and Shades, baby. Slice and dice come December. Title shot.
And by the way, Tony, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I know you, like I said, I know you don't do a lot of interviews. You and I have come a long way, right? There was a point where maybe we weren't on the best of terms. Tony, you still have me blocked on Instagram. How do I undo this? How do we fix this problem?
Hey, you know what? I'm not even sure, dude. It happens all the time. I'm not even positive. People say all the time, I follow them, I'll follow them. It just happens, dude. I'm not sure. Hey, you know what? Look, at the end of the day, what we do is what we do, and we make the sport better. So consider yourself unblocked. If anybody else is blocked, don't piss me off. We'll have a good time.
I appreciate love you guys. That. Thank you, Tony. All the best to you. There he is. Tony Ferguson, the one and only. Has to fight for the belt next. No ifs, ands, or buts. It has to happen. I'm sorry. We laid this out on Ariel the Bad Guy last week. Tony Ferguson has to fight the winner of Khabib versus Poirier. The only thing that could happen that would screw that up, in my opinion, is Khabib loses. 27-0, some freak thing. You got to run it back. But even then, you have to make a strong case for Tony. 12 in a row, all the crap he's dealt with, all the bad luck, the ups and downs, the emotional roller coaster has to happen, right? It has to happen. I don't throw around the word crime like it's just some word. Like, this has to happen. This guy has to fight for the belt. He has to fight for the belt next. And so for Connor, who obviously wants the shot against Khabib, and that fight obviously makes the most amount of money for the UFC and generates the most amount of buys, there are other fights that maybe don't do as much as Khabib, but probably do pretty darn close just because of how popular Conor McGregor is. So Conor versus the winner of Justin Gaethje and Donald Cerrone. That fight makes a lot of sense too. Why not? Tony, Khabib, Poirier winner, Conor, Gaethje, Cerrone fighting next week. Holloway, Volkanovski. It's very perfect. Let's not make this more complicated. I'll tell you more about MSG later on, but let's talk about a fighter who is booked for MSG because it plays into this whole story. Stay tuned for that. But one fight that is 100% booked for MSG is Darren Till versus Kelvin Gastelum. Now, we spoke to Darren Till a couple weeks ago. I don't like to bother him a lot, but like 3 days later, the fight got booked. So I had to ask him to come back, and he's gracious enough to join us right now. I do believe there he is. Darren Till, this time joining us via the magic of FaceTime. How are you?
I'm okay. What's happening?
Darren, long time no speak, my friend. This time not getting a tan?
Yeah, I've got a tan. What you think? Do you like it?
You just got one.
Yeah, of course.
How often do you go?
Just twice a week.
Twice a week? That seems like too much.
Oh, well, got to keep the tan topped up, Ariel.
Well, you look fantastic, my friend. By the way, you're a little bit indented too much to the right. If you can go back to, the opposite way of where you, no. The other way. No, put the phone back the way it was. There you go. Yeah, that's cool. Who's that? Your little baby?
That's her.
Oh, no.
Screaming.
She's not happy? Oh, no.
What's up?
I'm sorry.
What's up?
I get that reaction a lot from my guests.
Yeah.
Well, so Darren, I won't take up a lot of your time. I know you're busy. Ultimately, why did you decide on 185?
I'd grown a little bit, Ariel, in the time I'd had off, and it just seemed like the right decision. And mainly the move was because it was all down to Kelvin Gastelum's poll, you know, on Twitter that I seen. And, like, it just looked to me like a lot of the fans just, like, wanted that fight. I know that he said November, MSG, you know, who wants to fight him. And a lot of guys called him out, and I don't know. I said to the UFC, then, you know, let's make the fight. If Kelvin wants to fight, you know, let's make it. And Dana and that were like, are you sure this is the fight you want? You know, it's a tough guy. He's just coming off the title. Well, Kelvin, no matter what, Kelvin is just a tough fucking dude. And they were like that. And my coach then said to me, Colin, he was like, you know, it's up to you till this, that, the other. I said, listen, you know, I have to be honest with myself. And I didn't get in this to fight anything but the best. And in my opinion, at middleweight, you know, Kelvin is one of the best. It's not me getting ahead of myself either. You know, the idea never would have sprung in my head if Kelvin wouldn't have done the poll. I probably wouldn't have thought about any, you know, I maybe not wouldn't have fought this year, I don't know, but it just got me excited, especially an opponent like Kelvin, you know what I mean? So I said, let's make the fight, and now we're fighting November 2nd, Madison Square Garden, and young boys' dreams do come true.
And so for you, is this just a pit stop at 185, or do you think that this is now the permanent move to middleweight?
I don't know, Ariel. I know you see my photos last night on Instagram. I'm looking big, yeah.
Yes. You saw me creeping at your stories, right?
You always creep, Ariel, and I always send you little replies. Yeah.
Yes, you do. You do send me replies. They're very nice. Yes, you're looking very swole, as the kids say, Darren.
Not swole, Ariel. I'm not too... I'm not like so heavy, but you know, I'm comfortable. I'm very comfortable. I feel very good in training. I feel powerful, strong, and you know, let's just see where this takes me. This beautiful journey I'm on.
Well, I suspect that you're going to love fight week so much afterwards. You'll say like, what the heck was I doing? Killing myself, getting down to 170, right?
Yeah, most probably. I would like to enjoy a fight week where, you know, a lot of guys here, or fight week, I've seen this a lot of fight weeks, they just sort of, some guys, they just prowl around, they'll do a little run here and there, they'll hit pads, but like, fight week for me is when I'm still like in training. Like, my last fight week, I was training twice a day, running 50 minutes, hitting pads 10 rounds, you know, conditioning, grappling, like, I like it to train that way at fight week, but it was a lot about weight, and it'll be good this time to let off the brakes a bit and just enjoy more of the interviews and the stuff that comes with it. I feel like I need to enjoy that a bit more about fight week, you know what I mean?
True or false, me telling you when you asked me on the show a couple of weeks ago that you should move up to 185 was the deciding factor. That's what kind of put you over the edge. True or false?
What do you mean?
Like when you asked me, should I go up to 185? And I said, yes, please go up to 185. You said, you know what? If Ariel Helwani thinks this, then I must do it. I must listen to Ariel. He has my best interest in mind. True
or
false?
True.
So I will continue to be honest with you, Darren. I feel a little torn here because I'm so happy that you're finally going up to 185. I think this is going to be great for your career. It's healthier. It's better for you. You're going to be a beast up there. But then there's a part of me that's like, why go in there against the guy who's was the former number one contender not that long ago? Like, why not build ourselves back up?
Yeah, that's true, Ariel. Obviously, the UFC, they wanted a lot of things as well. They're talking about main events here and there. And I was like, well, does it have to be a main event? You know what I mean? They were like, Darren, you're not but a main event fighter now. And I was like, well, you know, that's quite true, I think. And like, Ariel, it's just... I don't, you know, my last fight, I got knocked out, flash knockout, and not a flash knockout, sorry, I got knocked out legitimately. And before that, I was just going in there for the kill, scrapping, you know, I was taking Masvidal to town early, you know, that's no lie. I was beating him, I nearly knocked him out in the first, and then I got knocked out, you know. But I just like to scrap, mate, and Kelvin, like, ignites that fire inside him. He's a fucking true Mexican, he's got a big old head. He fucking comes to take people's heads clean off. And I like that. I didn't get in this to fight nothing but that. I've always got to stay true to myself. And that's what I will do until I finish this sport. So what? Okay. People can say what they want. That until going up to 185 to fight Kelvin Gastelum, his first fight, is suicide. So fucking what? So what? I want to fight. I don't mind getting hit and shit like that. So I'm a true fighter, mate. I'm a fucking true fighter.
Why do you think he asked for you?
I don't think he did ask for me. I think he just done the poll.
Ah.
On this poll's so important to me because I think he just done the poll. And I was so surprised the way my name kept getting mentioned. And, you know, it did make me realize that I am a big name inside the sport and inside the UFC. And yet I am this main event fighter or whatever. But it just ignited the fire, mate. It's just Kelvin's, you know, I've been watching him for a while and he's no fucking Fingo. He's a world class athlete. He's not even an athlete, sorry, he's a world class fighter. And I am a world class fighter myself, I consider myself. So, you know, especially at MSG, I can't wait.
By the way, I'm just curious, why did you correct yourself there? You said he's not even an athlete, he's a world class fighter. What's the difference in your mind?
There's athletes. There's guys who are athletes. George St. Pierre was a world-class athlete. I look at Kelvin Gastelum and I just see him as... don't get me wrong, mate. He's a great MMA fighter, you know, in all that. But he's a fucking... He's a gritty, gritty fighter. And that's what I am.
I love that.
There's types of differences, Ariel, and the guys like... You know, there's certain guys you can pick out, and they are just complete and utter gritty fighters. And then there's the athletes.
And you mentioned earlier there was a chance that you would just take off the rest of the year. Why did you want to do that?
Well, not take off the rest of the year, just train and just propel myself and evolve with my coach Colin and my team at Army. Just train and see where things go. You know, there's no rush, Ariel. I'm 26 and I've already achieved so much, you know. I know I've achieved so much. I've been fighting since I was 13 years of age and there's no rush. You know, I've always said I'll retire around 35, 36. So I know I've got a lot of time to evolve my skill set and evolve the mind and stuff like that. But then certain things come along like Kelvin Gastelum, MSG November 2nd, and you can't say no and you have to ask for that shit.
And MSG is something you've always wanted to accomplish? You've always wanted to fight there?
I think anyone in this world who's an MMA fighter or boxer or what, I think they have dreams of fighting at places like that where all the greats once fought. And so, you know, for me, it's just, there's going to be many doubters, mate, and I don't really care. I'm famous for that and I just want to fight. There's going to be many people who are going to doubt me and that fuels the fire. I'm just training hard and I just want to go in there and fucking fight, mate. That's all I want to do.
I feel like there's a part of you that actually likes it when a lot of people are doubting you. Like, that's more comfortable.
Just do it. Just doubt me. Just doubt me as a person. Doubt me as a fighter. Doubt my skill set. Doubt everything about me. Ariel, I'll still sleep the same at night and I'll still work hard as I've always done. And, you know, there'll be that extra little bit of thing going into the fight. You know, with me, there's absolutely nothing to lose. If I lose, so what? I took a chance and it didn't work out. Is that the end of the world? No. You know what I mean, Ariel? So I'm going to go in there and I'm going to give my all as a world-class fighter. And I believe Kelvin will do the same. And let's make a great fight for me and him and for the fans and whoever else, the doubters, the non-doubters, whatever.
Did you hear Dana White say recently that he thinks maybe in hindsight they quote-unquote pushed you too soon? And if so, what did you make of that comment?
I don't see a lot of stuff, Ariel, like that. But yeah, someone sent me it on a message and I don't agree. I just feel like, you know, it was just not my time. It's just, I'll never say this, Ariel, and I'll never disrespect the fighter for saying it. But my last two fights, I lost to the better man that night. I always say it. Yeah, there's little things here and there, but I don't ever agree with fighters who come out to fight and make X amount of excuses. You went in there prepared to win. You went in there thinking you could win and you lost. So take your defeat like a man. People can say to me, till you lost because of maybe the weight cut, till you lost because of this. And I say, yeah, whatever really. The better man won that night. So, you know, I could have been beating Masvidal for the whole three rounds and in the last 10 seconds he catches me. I still have to have that same mentality that the better man won. And that's just how I am.
Are you doing anything in training differently for this one? Or are you sticking with the same people, the same routine, same everything?
Same people, some new faces, some heavier guys, you know. Switching things up, maybe not. You know, just just trying to get better, Ariel. Just trying to make my game plan better than Calvin's. He will be doing the same. And just trying to get better. Just trying to get better. And I don't do anything else, Ariel. I don't have anything else to do apart from get better in mixed martial arts. And hopefully one day become what I set out to do, as be one of the greatest. So, you know, that's it. I just want to train hard. And I always train hard, Ariel. And I'm always trying to evolve with my strengths and with my weaknesses. So we'll see, mate.
And please, just if I could ask before I let you go, no trips to the Canary Islands. Is that okay in between now and November 2nd?
You fucking know what time it is, Ariel. No, I won't be doing that.
All right. Cool.
Yeah.
Darren, you're the man. Thank you so much for this. Yeah. And I just wanted to give you a toast. Wish you the best. You know, all the best to you, Darren.
Ariel, six times we won that shit. Six times. They're doing quite well at the start, so we'll see how it goes.
Much love to you, my friend. And I like it. November 2nd, Madison Square Garden, the Mecca.
Who gave you that cup, by the way, Ariel? Who gave you that cup?
Actually, you want to know who gave it to me? Everton sent it to me.
Really?
Yes, because of Molly McCann.
I thought Molly might have given it to you.
No, Molly sent me a jersey, and they saw us talking about it, and so then they sent me a box of all kinds of stuff.
Okay, I'm going to speak to Steven Gerrard tomorrow, and we're going to get this shit on for Liverpool.
Come on, Steven. Where are you at? I can be bought.
Let's do it. I'm going to speak to him.
My fandom can be bought very clearly, but the Reds showed me no love, so I went with the Blues.
I'm going to sort that for you, Ariel. Trust
all right.
Me.
Look at you dropping Steven Gerrard's name like that. I like it.
You know that. I'm a little name drop announcer, Ariel.
Darren, you're the man. Thank you so much. I can't wait for it. November 2nd. Thank you for doing this. All the best. There he is, Darren Till. All right. Did what just happened, or did we avoid it from last time? We did avoid it? Yes? Okay, thank God. I thought it was Jorge Masvidal part two. Well, that was fun. Darren Till. Okay. Look at Darren Till just dropping a little Steven Gerrard mention over there. What's going on with Michael Owen, by the way? I saw Michael Owen is involved in some kind of crazy thing. I still feel bad about my cupcake incident with Dominic Cruz. But alas, these things happen in MMA, my friends. These things happen. So, Matter Moments, we're going to be joined by Kevin Lee, and we might have one more guest joining us. Stay tuned for that. Yes, I can confirm that at 1:15 p.m. Pacific time, we will be joined by Bellator president Scott Coker. You may have seen on his Instagram, he tweeted moments ago that he will be making an announcement. And so we called some people and he'll be joining us at 1:15. So before we say goodbye, Scott Coker, Bellator president, will be joining us to make an announcement. Stay tuned for that. Matter Moments, we're going to be joined by Kevin Lee, the Motown phenom. Like I said, I have been wondering where he's been, and I was checking on social media. Didn't do a lot of posts over the last few months since he fought Rafael dos Anjos. So I'm curious to see what's up with him. I saw a photo, though, of him recently, and he's got long hair these days. He's got a little bit of a New York Rick man bun. By the way, New York Rick asking for a shout-out, Tony Ferguson. Can you believe this, Corporate Jake? New York Rick texted me within seconds of Tony Ferguson talking about that Zhang Weili post, demanding that we give him a shout-out.
I told him to stay away from our show.
Well, the thing is, the problem is, New York Rick has never really been honest with the people. The people don't know what New York Rick does. The people don't know. This is classic New York Rick, by the way. This is classic New York Rick. It's like when people used to ask him back in the day to be on the MMA beat. They used to say, why don't you get New York Rick on the MMA beat? And he would let this go on. He would love it. He would never address it. He just wanted me to get all the heat. And the thing was, oh, here he is texting in all caps, by the way. And the thing was, he had a job. He couldn't come on the show, but he never addressed it. And so now it's the same thing all over again. He doesn't address why he doesn't do the Monday show, Tuesday show this week. He doesn't talk about it. And I don't know if I could talk about it. Like, am I allowed to say what he does? We know he works for ESPN. Am I allowed to say who he is at ESPN, what his role is? I don't know. I don't feel like it's my job. And so here he is asking for credit, but he's yet to really be honest with the people and the public about what he does here. So how can I give him credit if we don't even know what his role is? Do you see the predicament that I'm in? Now, if he wants to give me the green light, if he wants to tell me that, you know, I can say what he does here, I'd be happy to give the credit where it's due. But until I get that green light, as long as he is letting the he said I can't. So there you go. I can't say anything. Some kind of nonsense. Some kind of nonsense. Corporate Jake, I always wanted to do this because I'm a big fan of the Levitard show. Put it on the poll. What do you think Scott Coker is going to announce at 4:15 p.m. Eastern? Put that on the poll. You know how Levitard always does that? Put that on the poll.
Okay. Will do.
They always do that in the middle of the show. Put it on the poll, Mike. Put it on the poll. Whoever's back there, Allison, I think her name. Oh, I know she's the booker, but I don't know if she actually does the poll. Put it on the poll. Alert the world. 1:15 p.m. Pacific, 4:15 p.m. Eastern time. Bellator President Scott Coker will join us to make some kind of an announcement. And for the record, I don't know what the announcement is. I was just replaying. No, I was replaying the clip to see if we had a Jorge Masvidal situation because my heart almost stopped. But luckily we didn't. Right? We didn't. Let me tell you about UFC 242. Oh, by the way, actually, there was something I wanted to say about 242, but I will save that for later this week about some of my coverage. Solid lineup this Saturday. Prelims on UFC Fight Pass. Let me get the times right here. Oh, there it is. Look at that. I didn't know you got that. Oh, we got the music. Yeah. Abu Dhabi. Wait a second. No, I'm good. I'm doing a lot here. I don't know if you know this, but there's a live program going on. I'm booking guests. I'm trying to break news. You know, man of many traits, hats. Oh, wait. Sorry. Can you go back to the full screen? No. Okay. Did we connect with Kevin yet? If not, I'll deal with that in a second. For now, though, let's say hello to the Motown Phenom himself who's joining us. Kevin Lee, how are you, sir?
Oh, what's up, Ariel? I'm always good.
It has been a while since we've seen you, my man. It's been a while since we talked. It's been a while. I was looking on social media, and to be honest, you weren't posting a lot. You were kind of out of the limelight. Mm-hmm. Where have you been?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of people that even actually hit me up and kind of checked on me and all that. And I really do appreciate that from the bottom of my heart. But to me, it's just I just kind of had to shy away from it. I had to have like some real serious conversations. Like I said, my last fight, after that fight, it kind of made me question a lot of things. So I had to have, you know, kind of a sit back, think about it, and have some conversations with nobody else in the room between me and God or whoever looking down on it. But everything's smooth. And everybody who's hit me back, I let them know too. I'm in the right place. So I'm just ready to get to work now.
So do you have your next fight yet?
I don't, but we already in talks. You know, we trying to get on that New York card. They said they want me on there, Madison Square Garden, November 2nd. It's just right now it's about finding the right opponent. We threw out some names out there. Wonder Boy came to mind. Robbie Lawler was one. Vicente Luque was another one. I told him I really don't give a damn who I fight. I just want to be on that card and get going. Next week, I'm going to head out to Montreal to start my training camp regardless, so I'm ready to get going.
So you're sticking around at 170?
Yeah, no doubt. I think I've really grown into it too, you know, even with my sparring and me moving around with guys, they saying they can feel it too. I'm really growing into the weight class, so yeah, 170 is where it's at.
And so after the fight against RDA in May, like I said, you took the time off. Like, how did you, because that you posted that video, it was, you know, it was hard to watch. You were very down, but you were promising us that you would be back, that you would learn from this. How did you deal with the loss, and how long did it take for you to get over it, or are you not over it just yet?
I mean, those types of questions are hard to answer until you do it again. You know, I feel like I'm I feel like I got back on the right path. Like I said, it's a lot of it is I kind of already knew that I had to make those adjustments, and I just kind of put it on the back burner, to be honest. You know, I knew I needed a head coach. I knew I needed somebody to kind of pull the reins in a little bit. And I ignored that. And I just figured, you know, I'll go out there and fight and just keep fighting it. And then I'll worry about it later. But RDA kind of slapped me in the face. So, you know, it's kind of a wake up call to me. But I'm ready for it. You know, I said I was going to make my return back. Tomorrow's my birthday. So, you know, I might, you know, I'm going to spend the day, the whole day doing what I love. I'm going to go out and train from sundown to sunup. And you never know, I might get on like Instagram Live or something like that and make a return on social media. Like you said, I've been shying away from it, but it's about time.
So I got Dominic Cruz a birthday cake earlier because on Wikipedia it says it's his birthday today. But then he told me his actual birthday is in March. But now I'll just say this is for you.
Oh, where the candle at? Where the candle at? No. I need a candle through that joint.
At ESPN, they don't sell candles, right, apparently. Okay. This is, I mean, it's not bad, right? It really was for you.
Hazard, all right.
I got my guests mixed up.
Man, I don't want no secondhand. That ain't even a it's a cupcake.
It's a muffin.
We got to do better than this.
It's a muffin.
We got to do better than this. I'm going to text you my address. I'm expecting the cake in the mail.
All right. My bad. By the way, I like the hair. What's happening over there?
I appreciate that. You know, I'm trying out something different. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. It's the growth. It's the process. So, you know, my next fight, it'd be a whole lot different. I think, you know, people are excited to see me back. I'm more excited to come back. The hair going to be different. The swag going to be different. The whole mood. So I'm ready for it.
Okay, so we're going to let it grow?
Yeah. I'm going to let it go out. I'm going to try and go maybe another year or so, see what it can do. You know, right now it's just kind of twisted up, but, you know, never know.
We're gonna do dreads.
Might do something nice with it. I don't know. I'm just going with the wind. You know.
Okay.
These past couple months have really been about kind of figuring out who I am. You know, I'm only 26 years old. I'm about to be 27 tomorrow, and you know, I'm kind of coming into my own. So this come out of my head naturally. As a kid, it's kind of always been, especially as a young kid growing up in Detroit, it's kind of always been something I shied away from. You know, my hair was different than everybody else's. And it made me feel that type of way. But now I'm just like, I'm just going to embrace it. So I'm going to grow it out, you know, kind of get it really how I want it and just how God gave it to me.
Are you sporting the USADA 25 times tested t-shirt? Is that what you're wearing?
I am. I mean, to be honest with you, it wasn't really planned. it ain't really like no message or nothing.
Okay.
You know, it's just kind of comfortable. But it is a fact, too, at the same time. So
I thought you were trying to send a message to someone.
If the shoe fit, then go ahead and wear it. But, you know, these are just facts.
Okay.
That's all I'm talking.
So is your spot on the MSG card, is that confirmed? It's just a matter of finding the right guy now?
Yeah, I think so. You know, after my conversation with Dana and those guys last week, you know, they want me on that card. So right now it's just finding an opponent, finding who's going to take it. You know, I think either way, it's a big fight. So, you know, I think somebody's going to step up eventually, especially at 170. You know, I think somebody will.
Do you have a number one preference? If the UFC came to you and said, who's the guy? I know you mentioned a few guys earlier, but is there a guy at the top of the list?
No, to be honest, I mean, Wonderboy, kind of just because he's got those roots in New York. And I kind of always like being the bad guy and going into his territory. But to be honest with you, I'll fight any one of them. You know, Wonder Boy, you know, like I said, Lawler is kind of on his way out a little bit, but he'd be the most dangerous fight, I think. You know, when you got somebody who's a champ like that and backed into the corner, he's going to be dangerous. So that kind of intrigued me. Then you got somebody like Luque, who's on a big win streak and still coming up, and I'm giving him a chance to get a big name on his record. So, you know, all those fights, they all real dangerous, and they all kind of intrigue me. So we'll see how the whole thing play out.
All right.
It don't matter to me.
You didn't consider going back to 155 after the last fight, right?
Nah, to be honest. I mean, it's a lot of traction. It's a lot of moving parts. You know, you got Khabib getting ready to defend that title this weekend and all that. But to be honest, I've just been focusing on myself. I ain't really worried about, you you know, what favorable matchups is out there, you know, how the timeline looking, and, you know, kind of how I normally would play it. I just been kind of all that don't really matter to me. What matters is showing up to the fight 100% healthy and ready to go. And I feel like 170 is the weight class to do that in.
Yeah, I couldn't help but think of you, especially this week. You were the guy calling out Khabib before anyone wanted to fight him, right? You were calling out Islam Makhachev, and here they are fighting in Abu Dhabi. This would have been a cool spot for Kevin Lee to be in. This should have been your platform. You know what I mean? I know you said you're kind of thinking about yourself and moving on, but if I'm being honest, like, I feel like you should, like, you versus, I know it's not your weight class. I know we're moving, but like, you versus Makhachev in Abu Dhabi would have been just huge, right?
Yeah. I'm with you, but you know, everything happened for a reason, Ariel. That's right. All I can say to it. I mean, they weren't gonna fight me no way. I'm just being honest. You know, I'm just kind of barking up the tree for as long as possible. But you know, they handlers and they people was gonna keep me away from them for as long as possible anyway. So you know, it's no sense in chasing after somebody who really don't want to fight. So you know, it is what it is. And we still got a future date if they want to have that happen. I know Khabib's talking about trying to retire and all this before, you know, he really is even getting a serious challenge. I mean, I think Dustin is going to give him a big fight this weekend. But, you know, he's already talking about retirement. So I ain't got no interest in somebody like that. I'm looking for bigger and better challenges. You know me, Ariel. If it's anything, nobody can ever say I back down from a challenge. You know, you love to bring up Ally Aquinta every time we do an interview or every time we talk. And, you know, the judges say that Al beat me that night. And then in his next fight, he go on and fight Donald Cerrone. And my next fight, I fight RDA, who beat Donald twice. And then second time, more convincing. So I always like a bigger and better challenge than what I got before. And I don't think like Khabib or Islam is one of them.
And for the record, we've been talking now for 10 minutes, Kevin. I haven't even uttered the name Ally Aquinta. So what do you, I mean.
I did it for you.
Yeah.
I jumped the gun.
He was not even on my radar. He was not even on my mind.
Sorry, that was your next question?
No, it wasn't my next question. Sorry,
how long was this interview? 15, 20 minutes?
Come on.
It was in there. You got it written down on that little, I see you.
I got nothing written down. I don't write my question. I moved on. Last time you were on, you said it loud and clear. No more Ally Aquinta questions. And so I got the message.
Well, there you go. I'm just speaking facts to you. I ain't answering no questions. I'm just telling you facts. That's
all right.
Just so you can write that on the record.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. So, you know, like I saw, speaking of the Instagram, I think you're right after the fight, you posted that video and then you went a long break and then you posted something about, and I forget the guy's name. That's why I'm stumbling here, but you met with like a sports psychiatrist, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Vinny Shorman.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that your first time? Like, what led you to meeting with him? Was that your first time meeting with him? And is this something that you feel like is working?
Yeah, I mean, that was my first time meeting with him. We've had a couple conversations since then, and we're going to pick it back up, especially once training camp gets going. I'll probably talk to him at the end of this week. And like I said, I might make even a reappearance up on social media. But, you know, it was actually Joe Rogan who kind of put me on him. And you know, talking with him and then talking with a bunch of other fighters who have used them to and who have used other mental coaches, I feel like it is something that is going to benefit me. And it's something that I can kind of get to the root of certain issues that I'd be having. I'm never one to like really shy away from the problems that I face even. But it's hard sometimes for you to tell yourself what you don't know. So using somebody like that who's kind of diving into it and saying, okay, this is why you need somebody to pull in the reins. You know, I'm very, I always got like this do or die attitude. And to be honest with you, I feel like a fucking superhero sometimes. Like, I feel like I can do it all. And I need somebody to pull in the reins on me and that coach to get into my ear and tell me when to play it smart. And, you know, Vinny and working with this mental coach is really going to help me understand why that even is. And you know, I think it's going to be a benefit. We ain't talked for a minute, but we're going to pick it back up when training camp starts.
Do you know of other athletes who have gone this route and who have benefited from doing something like this?
Yeah, I mean, you hear a lot about a lot of champions talk about it, especially. I know he's working with Eddie Alvarez in his last fight, and Eddie won that fight. So, you know, and he's working with a couple of other guys too that, you know, I won't really mention names like that, but you know, it's, you hear a lot of people talk, the mental game and the mental side of this sport is such a big deal. And we spent so little bit of time kind of practicing on it. We got so much other shit to worry about. I feel like this is going, it's going to be a benefit at the end of the day.
Do you meet with him in person or is it a phone thing, Skype thing?
Yeah, it's a Skype thing. I mean, okay. he's over in England, so it's going to be kind of, you know, eventually, okay. You know, he'll come out here. I think he's coming to Vegas, maybe 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks or something. I'll probably be in Montreal by then, but we'll get together. I don't know. But I get enough over the Skype and, you know, I'm just very open anyway. So if you ask me a question, I'm going to give you a straight up answer. And that's what he do. And then he gives that back to me. British folks, they kind of like that anyway. They kind of more upfront. I kind of like it. So, he's British and he don't give a fuck.
By the way, are you doing your whole camp in Montreal?
Yeah, I'll do the whole camp there.
Wow. And will you be cornered by Faraz and all those guys?
Yeah, Faraz will definitely be in my corner. Wow. I don't know about anybody else just now, but, you know, me and him have really been at a lot of talks. And so Faraz is definitely the guy that I'm going to be working with.
And the guys that you were working with back in Vegas, are you not working with them at all anymore?
No, they'll still be in my corner. Dewey Cooper, yeah. Eric Nixick. And then Corey Goodwin will be him. You know, we'll see. Cause you know, for this one, I'm going to take a 3-round fight. It's about time. You know, my past like 5 or 6 fights have been, all main events, all 5-rounders. So it's about time I get a 3-round fight. I'm only going to have 3 cornermen and, we'll kind of figure that out. But my guys are my guys to the end of time. You know, it's just when Robert Fallis passed away, it's like, I didn't have that person to kind of fill that void a little bit. And nobody's going to be able to do it, but Faraz is going to be able to give me some things that I'm lacking from having him in my corner. So, you know, it's just an addition. It's not like I'm wiping everything clean and going with somebody completely different, a completely different team or anything like that. I love my guys here in Vegas. I'm still going to use them, you know, when I'm here. But just, you know, it's time to really buckle down and really get to work.
Tyron Woodley told us recently that he's also going to go there. Have you talked to him about working together while you're there?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely going to work. You know, we haven't really, like, sat down and got no dates together. I don't know when his next fight is. And we ain't really, you know, squashed out all them little details and all that. But me and Tyron always been cool. We definitely going to work. We worked before in the past. So if anything, that's just going to be a good little dynamic duo that you got going on.
Yeah. And by the way, I was talking to Tony Ferguson earlier, and he said – I was asking him about the whole, like, meme, I guess the kids call, where they say Tony Ferguson is the kind of guy to so-and-so. You have your own. Where does Kevin Lee fit into all of this? Is that from Chael? Did Chael start that?
He might have. You know, I love Chael. I don't know if Chael himself started it, but, you know, I think the people that follow Chael and love Chael just as much as I do, they probably did it. So, you know,
Chael
I don't
loves
know.
You.
You know, these memes, they come and go. So you know, we'll see how that whole plan out. I'm chasing after titles. I ain't chasing after no meme.
Right.
You know, we make millions. That's all.
You're trying to secure the bag, right?
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. I'm already in it, but, you know, I'm going to get it for sure.
Kevin, it's good to talk to you, my man. Keep us posted on that fight.
Always.
Would love to see you fight at MSG. That's a really big deal. Good to see you in good spirits, smiling, happy. I'm looking forward to the next one.
Always. And like I said, I might give a little insight tomorrow into everything that I've been working on while I've been down. So, you know, if folks are interested, that's all.
All right. We shall look out for that. Thank you very much. Motown Phenom himself, Kevin Lee, joining us right now on the program. Appreciate his time very much. So moments ago, I thought he was going to come on and announce it on the show. I guess there were some trigger-happy PR people out there. But nevertheless, the big news is, as I mentioned, by the way, on my thoughts column earlier today, Chris Cyborg has signed with Bellator MMA. They just released this statement saying that the deal is the largest of its kind in women's MMA history. She has signed an exclusive multi-year, multi-fight deal with Bellator, fighting in the women's featherweight division. Of course, the champion there is Julia Budd. This reunites Scott Coker, the former Strikeforce president, now current Bellator MMA president, Strikeforce CEO as well, with Cyborg. They worked very well together back in the day. And wouldn't you know it, the great Scott Coker joining us right now to talk about this massive piece of news. Scott, how are you?
How are you?
I'm doing well. Congratulations on this. Now the press release states largest deal of its kind for women's MMA. How do you know that to be true?
Well, you know, I feel it is true because, you know, we did some research on what the athletes were getting paid, and I don't want to get into what our deal is with Cyborg, but, you know, there were some documents that were released in court filings and in different California state lawsuits and that sort of thing. So we put it all together. We said, you know, I think we have the biggest contract put together in the history of female MMA, so let's go with it. And we feel very confident about saying that. Cyborg is very happy. And we're excited to have her on this team because we have some great female fighters at 145, including our champ, Julia Budd, that she'll be able to compete with and fight. And we're excited to have her back.
How many fights did you sign her for?
Well, you know, I can't get into those details, but I can tell you this is multi-fights, multi-years. And, you know, I think that she's, you know, really as far as like what's left in her gas tank, I think she's got a ton left. And whether she fights for two or three or four more years, you know, we feel that she'll be with us until she retires one day.
After her fight in the UFC in late July against Felicia Spencer, I said that I thought that she would be the most sought-after free agent in MMA since Dan Henderson left the UFC and signed with Strikeforce, signed with you. I'm wondering, what were the negotiations like? Were you competing against a lot of other suitors, or were you guys always the front runners?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, the day that I got the call saying that she was a free agent, I couldn't believe it. I mean, a fighter of this stature, you know, just to, you know, to have an issue with and let them go, or, you know, it just means that there's a lack of commitment to that weight division, really. So, you know, we are in that weight division business. And so we thought it was always a great fit. I do know, and her manager and her agent were out there talking to everybody. And luckily we were the ones that won the prize. And you can imagine the other suitors that are out there, and everybody's throwing around some dollars. And I always said to fighters, look, if you want to know your true value, get to free agency. Then you'll know what your free value is, what your value is. Because until you get to free agency, you're not going to have other companies bidding on your services. And that's what Cyborg did. She was a very unique situation where she became a free agent right away. Everybody's talking to her. Everybody's trying to bid for her. Everybody's trying to, you know, to get her to sign. And I think that our offer was attractive. And she chose Bellator.
How did you feel about the way her run with the UFC ended? The abrupt ending, the back and forth with Dana White, the things that were said. It got a little ugly there towards the end. How did you feel about all that?
I mean, that's all unnecessary. I mean, to me, it's like, look, she is the greatest female fighter of all time. I don't care what anybody says. And I think I know the female division as well as anybody. And the history of the female division. So to me, it's like, look, it's unnecessary. Am I surprised? No. It's just, you know, someone trying to come at her, trying to devalue her. But come on, we all know what the value of Cyborg is. And I think we represented it in our deal. So, you know, to me, she is, like I said, has a lot left in her gas tank. We got great fights ahead for her, and I'm excited to get in the cage as soon as she's ready to go.
So even though she recently lost to Amanda Nunes, you still consider her the greatest female fighter of all time?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, you know, one fight does not make, you know, the legacy of an athlete, right? And, she had that fight with Amanda. I watched it. I thought that, listen, Amanda's a great fighter. She's a great champion. She also started in Strikeforce. So we got to give her that. But, you know, to me, it's like, look, she got clipped. You know, Cyborg went after, she got clipped again, and that was the end of the fight. You know, do I think maybe a rematch could be different? It might be. But, you know, if you look at all the accomplishments of Cyborg over the last, you know, last 10 years, I mean, there has been nobody greater in the female division than Christine Cyborg.
You know, she's been sort of branded as kind of being tough to work with, right? You've worked with her, you promoted her, you had her, and at the time, it's kind of crazy. It's almost exactly 10 years to the day of the big Gina Carano fight. I believe it was August 15, 2009. Was she difficult to work with when you were promoting her back in the Strikeforce days?
You know, I have never had a problem. This is the first time I've ever even heard that she was difficult to work with. And, you know, and partially I feel like it's like, you know, honestly, I didn't know. I don't think that the UFC knew what to do with her because they're not in the 145-pound weight class business. They're just not. And so, you know, they brought out fighters to fight her. They brought in, you know, girls to come fight her. But that's not their core business, their weight classes that they traditionally promote in. So I think that they were just, it was just like, you know what? And I think when we were in the business with Cyborg back in the Strikeforce days, you know, we were in the business of a weight class, and we promoted her, and we, you know, and did our best to give her the big fights, and she had some great fights there. One with Gina, Marlis Conan, all the other fighters. And then, you know, and then I think that, you know, the problem really was, you know, what do we do with Christine Cyborg if we're not really in that weight class? And that's the way I look at it. But, you know, like I said, it's at the end of the day, we're happy to have her here at Bellator. We're going to do a lot of great things with her, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be fun.
Last thing on the past, I'm wondering if you asked her about the end, like the video and the subtitle thing with Dana White. Like, did you get her side of the story there? Do you feel comfortable with just everything going on in her life? Because that was kind of a strange ending to a strange relationship from the beginning, right?
You know, honestly, Errol, I didn't even see the video.
Okay.
So I don't know how to comment on that, but I heard that it was kind of, you know, like there was some problems or this or that. But, it doesn't matter to me. I mean, to me, this is a fresh start. She has a clean slate here. We're gonna go into business together. We're gonna do some great things. And you know, one of the things that she wants to do, that just to let you guys know in her agreement, is she wants to try a boxing fight. So we're gonna allow her to do that as well. So to me, you know, the slate is a fresh start. Let's go out and make some big noise together. And I think that, you know, she's going to have a great time here at Bellator.
As far as boxing is concerned, would you promote that fight, or would you allow her to go, you know, work for another promoter and do that?
I mean, to me, it's if she wanted to promote and we could be involved, I would love to do that. But if it made more sense for her to work with somebody else, and just as long as we had a synergy with the promotion, I think that it would be great. I mean, either way is fine with me.
Is her debut set yet?
No, listen, this just all came down. Honestly, the signature is still wet from the ink. This came in, you know, this morning. And then everybody starts scrambling to get the news out. Cause, you know, as you know, you guys are very, very sharp and on top of things and would figure this out sooner than later. So we wanted to get the news out. And, but honestly, that signature page came in, you know, 30 minutes before we made the announcement.
Will her first fight be against Julia Budd for the belt?
Has not been determined. The date, the location, everything like that, the opponent, it just hasn't been determined. But, you know, we're going to have her come up to San Jose to the fight this weekend, the Bader versus Congo event on DAZN. And we're going to sit down and talk about, you know, her training camp, when she wants to fight, when she wants to get back into the cage.
Would it be a fair guess to say her first fight would be for the belt? Like, is that what you're leaning towards right now? What are you feeling right now? Because there's no one bigger than her, right? Greatest female. Like, why wouldn't she want? Usually I'd say win a fight, your way in, but right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, you know, she and Julia would be an amazing fight. I think Julia has been just, you know, kicking ass on this. I think she's like on a 7 or 8 fight win streak. That would be an amazing fight to start her career in Bellator. But we just haven't talked about it, Ariel, but these are things that we will talk about. I haven't talked to Julia about it. I think Julia is now just learning about the signing, like everybody else. So, you know, we have a lot to talk about this weekend with her, and as well as all the other girls in our division.
And speaking of female fighters who are free agents, what about Kat Zingano? Have you talked to her?
You know, I personally haven't. I think my guys are in touch with her management.
Yes.
So I think there's a certain amount of dialogue, you know, between the camps. But I'm not sure what the update is at this point.
Are you interested in her?
Yeah, absolutely. We're interested in any free agent that can move the needle, provide great fights for us, and we feel, you know, is a TV star. So I think Kat would fit into that box. It's just, you know, I'm just not sure where my guys are at.
Some kind of featherweight division you would have. You got Cyborg, Julia Budd, you could sign Kat Zingano. I mean, that's a who's who right there.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it's with that fight with Julia Budd, who knows? I mean, Julia is a talented athlete. And,
yes.
You know, she had a great stand-up striking career even before she got into MMA. And the first time I heard about Julia was, I think, that someone told me that she beat Gina in a stand-up fight, in a Muay Thai fight. And I couldn't believe it, you know? And so because Gina was so talented. So I go, she must be really good. So well-rounded fighter, as good as anybody. And I think that those fights ahead for Julia, for Cyborg, you know. But we have three or four different girls that could come and compete with Cyborg.
That's right. By the way, I don't want to put you on the spot, but sometimes I like to do that. Nick Newell, you know I'm high on Nick Newell. He just had his first fight. Are you going to sign him to a long-term deal? It's just a one-fight deal.
Absolutely.
Are you going to sign him?
No. We're in the talks of signing him right now to a multi-fight contract. And I'll tell you, Errol, you know what the thing about that guy is that I sat down with him after the weigh-ins in Bridgeport, and we had a nice conversation. And the more I got to know him, I said, you know what? This guy really is everything that a fighter should be, right, as far as his character, his determination, his perseverance, his indomitable spirit. And the more I get to know about his story, man, it's an amazing martial arts journey that he's had. And you know what? I want to be the guy that continues that journey for him. So, yes, we want to be in the middle business, and we want to go into a multi-fight year contract with him.
All right. I like that. But you haven't signed him just yet, right? Just to be clear?
No,
okay.
I called him actually the other day, and we talked, had a nice conversation. But the more and more I get to know the kid, I mean, it's really, man, I mean, talk about overcoming obstacles.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's people in life that, you know, have a lot of complaints about this or that. And then, you know, there are the people that go out there and get it done and overcome obstacles and don't complain and just put their head down and get the nose to the grind. And really just have a great attitude. And I really feel like Nick's that guy. So, I'm not saying it's going to get done. You know, of course we have to work it out. But we're definitely going to put our best foot forward in working it out.
Exciting time for Bellator MMA. You had that show just a couple of weeks ago, right here in Connecticut. 14 fights, 14 finishes, great card. You got the card this weekend, as you said, the quote unquote best heavyweight on the planet. Ryan Bader defending his title for the first time against Czech Congo, and of course the start. Why are you laughing, Scott?
Because I think you're taking a shot at me.
No,
man, because of what I said.
I said the quote.
I really believe it. I believe if you put Stipe in there with him, I think Ryan Bader would beat him. So that's just how I feel.
Scott, no shots. I just wanted to emphasize the statement. It's a listen. I like when Scott Coker makes bold statements. I like this Scott. The little, you know, it's good. It's good. It's good for everyone. Well, Ryan Bader is fighting against Czech Congo, but it's also the start of the featherweight tournament, the 16-man featherweight tournament. Is it eight fights? What is it? Yeah.
Yes, no. You have four fights.
Four
eight
fights.
Athletes in the featherweight division.
Yes.
It's the launch of our featherweight tournament, which will continue on September 28th in Los Angeles.
That's right.
And so it'll be Daniel Strauss fighting Campos, Pat Curran fighting Borix. We have Taiwan Claxton fighting Emmanuel Sanchez, and then we have Cecilia versus Pedro Carvalho. So that's the tournament that'll fight in San Jose, along with Ryan Bader fighting Czech Congo, which I think is going to be a very interesting matchup. And the featherweight tournament will be all year long. Again, it's a 16-man tournament, not a 8-man tournament, and then they'll continue. The pairing show. The pairings of the tournament actually will be live on DAZN as part of our DAZN show on the 28th in LA. On the 28th, everybody that leaves the stadium that night will know who's fighting who, when they're fighting, and when what side of the bracket they'll be on.
Oh, wow. I like that. Like we talked about a couple of weeks ago, sort of a nod to the Japanese way of doing things. And the best part about Saturday is, you know, I've said historically, I don't like when you guys go head to head with the UFC because there's only so much capacity in my brain. But the best part is UFC's done at around 5. Your card starts at 6:45. It's going to be a great day. You can literally sit in front of the TV for like 14 straight hours and there's no conflicts. You can watch it all. Everyone's saying kumbaya. No one's competing. It's going to be a beautiful day on Saturday. So I like it very much.
I love it. Mixed martial arts for everybody.
Yes. Scott, thank you for doing this on such late notice, and congratulations. Why are you laughing again, Scott? Why do you keep laughing at me?
I'm laughing because, listen, you know the text we were having back and forth.
Yes.
Listen, it's all good. All love, man. You're doing a great job, and, you know, it's
I'm very greedy, Scott.
Yeah, listen, I love it. that's why you're successful.
Thank you.
So you're doing a great job, like I said, and I've seen you come up from that first gig you had over, was it on AOL or was it at AOL building?
MMA Rated, Wasserman Media Group.
MMA Rated. I was there, man. I lived that experience with you.
You did.
So we've been friends for a long time, and I'm really proud of everything you're doing, man. You're doing a great job. And we'll have more information coming soon.
Yeah, just next time, break the news on my show. You know, I'm on the air. It'd be nice, but that's all.
Here's my last plug. Listen, the Beta Fight with Congo, live on DAZN, 7 o'clock, Saturday night.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate
it. Bye-bye.
All right, there he is, Scott Coker, breaking some news today. It's good to do a show on a Tuesday, right? You get some breaking news. Chris Cyborg has officially signed, and I failed to mention some other names, but Janae Harding is an up-and-comer. Of course, Leslie Smith is out there. So all of a sudden, Bellator very much in the women's featherweight division business. Chris Cyborg has officially signed with Bellator. How about that? Nice little way to end a Tuesday show. Let me just say, I've been doing this show 10-plus years now, a little over 10 years. I've never felt less confident going into a show that everyone would show up, A, and B, show up on time. I said this to multiple people. I said it to Corporate Jake. I said it to Riva. I said it to one of the newest members of the squad, Jordan, and Addison. I said it to all of them. I would have said it to the voice of God, but she's conspicuous in her absence today. I am shocked that everyone showed up. I'm shocked that everyone actually was on time. This has been a great day. I feel really good. I have never been less confident, and I have been surprised. So how about that? Great way to end. I'm not going to ruin anything else, and I'm going to say goodbye. UFC 242 this weekend, Abu Dhabi. I was going to do a whole little homage to my trip to Abu Dhabi. We had a whole thing planned, but unfortunately, much like Matt Damon's appearance on the show, we have run out of time. No time for it. I'm sorry. Crazy weekend coming up, though. Cage Warriors Unplugged 2, Invicta FC Phoenix Series 2, LFA 75, Bellator 226, and UFC 242. Action kicks off 10:15 a.m. Eastern. Kicks off 10:15 a.m. Eastern on ESPN+. Bilal Muhammad against Takashi Sato. Also of note on that prelim card, Nordine Taleb, Don Madge, looking forward to that. Then we go to FX or ESPN Plus, 12 p.m. Eastern, and then the main card at 2 p.m. Eastern. Khabib Nurmagomedov, Dustin Poirier, lightweight title. What a scene it will be as Khabib fights in front of all those people in Abu Dhabi, his fellow Muslims. It's going to be magical. Thank you very much, Zhang Weili. Thank you very much, Paul Felder. Thank you very much, Joanne Calderwood, Carlos Condit, Dominic Cruz, Tony Ferguson, Darren Till, Kevin Lee, and Scott Coker. Thanks to all of you. As always, if you missed anything, check it out. YouTube, iTunes, Twitter, all those places and more. Back next week, same time and place. Till I say peace. I'm out of here.